for the March 16th meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. We have one matter on the agenda, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Let me tell you how it's going to go. We are going to have an invocation and a pledge of allegiance. We're going to go into executive session to discuss some legal matters. When we come out here, the staff will give a presentation on this project. The applicant will add to that information. And then I'm going to throw it open for public comment, either pro or con. How many people in the audience would expect to testify here today? Very good. So if that's going to be the case, unless we get a flood of people coming in here, I'm not going to put a timer on you, but I'm going to ask very much that you stick to the matters at hand and no filibusters, if you would, please. The commission very much prizes brevity and succinctness, and they're going to wrestle with this as much as you all have wrestled with this. So welcome to the meeting. We're going to have a nice, productive, civil discussion. At the end of the day here, the board's going to make a decision. I have no idea what the decision is going to be. So can we start with an invocation led by Mr. Ed Tankard, and then we'll have a pledge of allegiance facing the flag. So all rise.
Lord, let us pray. We give thanks for the abundant winter harvest of oysters. We ask that our crab season be as abundant. Today, we ask that our deliberations and decisions be honest and forthright. Further, we give thanks for the laws of the Commonwealth, which are proof that we can rise above tribalism and force. For this, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Please face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ms. Block, do we have a reason to have a closed meeting to discuss legal matters with counsel?
Yes, we do.
In order to go into executive session, we're going to need a motion. Mr. Ballard?
I move that this meeting be recessed and that the commission immediately reconvene in closed meeting for the purpose of consultation with legal counsel and briefings by staff members pertaining to actual or probable litigation or other specific legal matters requiring legal advice by counsel as permitted by subsection A, paragraph 7 of section 2.23711 of the Code of Virginia pertaining to agenda item number 5.
Second.
It's a motion by Mr. Ballard and a second by Mr. Minor. Is there any discussion? Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? The chair votes aye as well. We will now adjourn into executive session. We're going to try to keep it as brief as possible. We don't want to hold you up any more than we want to get stuck talking about legal matters for a long time. So give us a few minutes. We'll be back. We're going to go in that room over there. Let's reconvene the meeting here. Ms. Ballard, we need a motion here pertaining to the executive session discussion.
Whereas the commission has convened a closed meeting on this date pursuant to an affirmative recorded vote and in accordance with the provisions of the Virginia Freedom of Information Act, and whereas section 2.23712D of the Code of Virginia requires a certification by this commission that such closed meeting was conducted in conformity with Virginia law. Now, therefore, the commission hereby certifies that, to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Virginia law, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the closed meeting by the commission.
Motion by Mr. Ballard. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. France here. Any discussion? This requires a roll call vote, so I'm going to go from left to right here. Mrs. Everett.
Yes, I agree.
Mrs. Lusk.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Meyer?
Aye.
Mr. Ballard?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Mr. Neal?
Aye.
Mr. Tankard?
Aye.
Mr. France?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much. The motion passes unanimously. So, Mr. Owen, will you please start the ball rolling here with the presentation, the staff presentation on this project? It's true. I certainly need to swear in staff. Thank you for reminding me. Well, the staff and anybody from the Virginia Institute of Marine Science who may testify here today, please rise, raise your right hands. Do you hereby swear the testimony you may give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Please be seated. Before we start here, Mrs. Everett has a statement. Mrs. Everett.
I will not cast a vote today on the subaqueous permit application submitted by Atlantic Coast Pipeline, LLC. I do not have a conflict of interest. I make this decision solely to prevent any public concern related to litigation recently filed by my employer, Chesapeake Bay Foundation, over a different permit for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline project.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Everett. So that's a formal recusal? Thank you. Mr. Owen, please proceed. Tell us what we need to know.
Good morning, sir. Before I begin my briefing, I would like to say it has been my honor, my privilege to serve you for 11 years, to work with you. The Commonwealth of Virginia will truly suffer your absence as Commissioner, sir. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Good morning to the commissioners, to the people in the audience. Today, Atlantic Coast Pipeline is requesting authorization to install a natural gas pipeline beneath the bed of 51 non-tidal streams, swamps, and/or rivers. The drainage area is greater than 5 square miles, which is considered to be state-owned subaqueous bottomlands of the Commonwealth. Beneath 3 tidal streams and approximately 1.6 acres of tidal wetlands along the designated pipeline corridor in Highland, Bath, Augusta, Nelson, Buckingham, Prince Edward, Cumberland, Nottoway, Dinwiddie, Brunswick, Greensville, and Southampton counties, and the cities of Chesapeake and Suffolk. The pipeline is protested by numerous citizens along its route. The next slide, the approved right-of-way for this pipeline is the red line, approved by FERC in October 2017. The project calls for the installation of approximately 605 miles of interstate natural gas pipeline, transmission pipeline, known as the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, in West Virginia, Virginia, North Carolina. The purpose is to deliver up to 1.5 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day to customers in Virginia and North Carolina. The project will begin in Highland County. The right-of-way from there moves east to southeast through Stanton, passes past Charlottesville in between Lynchburg and Virginia, and will exit the Commonwealth in Greensville County. There is a lateral line that will move east-northeast over to Chesapeake, where it will tie into an existing Virginia natural gas pipeline. This project will cross a total of 889 water bodies in the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's everything from a farm pond to a stream to a river to a forested wetland to a tidal wetland. The reason you're here today is for the following VMRC jurisdictional crossings: 51 non-tidal streams and or swamps, 3 tidal streams, and 1.6 acres of tidal wetlands. In your packet mailed out on Monday, we called out 48 non-tidal streams. That is still the case. However, there are 3 forested wetlands in Suffolk that are large enough, have a large enough drainage area, that they also have state-owned submerged land within them. The consultant had it right. They were listed as wetlands. They are wetlands. They are forested wetlands, but for clarity, there will be a total of 51 non-tidal water bodies that will include streams, rivers, and or these 3 forested wetland crossings. All of them are on this slide. I plotted the coordinates for all the crossings. It looks just like your red line 2 slides ago. The project begins in Highland County, moves east, southeast, all the way down to Greensville County, where it exits the Commonwealth, and moves east, northeast, over to Chesapeake. Richmond is highlighted in red. The Commonwealth's ownership of submerged lands was clarified through an opinion by Gerald Baliles, then Attorney General, in May of 1982. This opinion stated in part that the Commission should assume that all streams above some administratively determined minimum size are subject to its jurisdiction. The Commission has defined the minimum size of non-tidal waterways as those perennial streams with a drainage area of 5 square miles with a mean annual in-stream flow of 5 cubic feet per second. Given these thresholds, and these are in both the NEPA documents and in the application that's before us, there will be 51, as I said, non-tidal waterways. They're all highlighted in the slide and the counties that they're from, three tidal rivers. The project will additionally impact approximately 1.6 acres of tidal wetlands in the city of Chesapeake. Today, you are acting as the default wetlands board for the city of Chesapeake. Pursuant to Chapter 13 of Title 28.2 of the Code of Virginia, since Chesapeake has rescinded the model wetlands ordinance. The pipeline will additionally be directionally drilled beneath tidal wetlands in Suffolk. They're wetlands that are fringing both the western branch of the Nazan River and the Nazan River itself, but the directional bore will avoid the direct impacts to those wetlands. This is a slide that I am want to illustrate with the mouse. The green hats there that you see there, that is one of the four tidal wetland crossings in Chesapeake, east of Jarvis Road. I went out with them, who's sitting to my left, and the consultant, and with the Corps of Engineers, and we delineated the actual line as to where the tidal wetland limits are. The purple hashed area to the right and left of that is where they go, the slope grade changes to a higher elevation and the tidal wetlands grade to non-tidal wetlands. And these are at the head of an unnamed gut of Deep Creek in Chesapeake. And the pipeline shown in red will traverse the tidal wetlands. So that's one of your four sites. This is the second site, not far from there, east of Steel Road. Predominantly a Phragmites community, the common reed, which is an invasive species, and there we are out in the marsh with the Dominion consultant. The Corps of Engineers employee is off to the left, partially obscured. This is a thicket of reed. And if you'll note, some of those reeds are 5 and 6 feet over my head. These things stand 8 and 10 and 12 feet tall. They will go out into these areas with mats. The equipment will sit on mats. They'll dig the trench. They'll lay the pipe. They'll backfill the trench. And they're required to revegetate the area with the tidal wetland species. We have comments from BIMS. These are the summary comments from their overall comments. Approximately 1.6 acres of tidal wetland impacts will occur due to the installation of the pipelines proposed via the open cut method across four tidal wetland sites. The open cut impacts could be avoided if the directional drill was used for these sites. The HDD crossings, the horizontal directional drill crossings of the western branch of the Nansman and the Nansman itself and the southern branch of the Elizabeth River and the fringing wetlands are recognized by VEMS as measures to avoid those impacts. If there is an unintentional drilling fluid return, what we call the frack out, Mr. Tankard, that could damage tidal wetlands. BIMS is recommending that the permittee shall revegetate any tidal wetland areas that are either damaged by a potential frack out and all of the open cut areas that will necessarily excavate the tidal wetlands. And all these sites should be monitored for a minimum of 5 years to ensure that a minimum of 80% vegetative cover is reestablished. There will be 19 total directional drill crossings in the Commonwealth. Six of them are to jurisdictional waters for this commission. Two of them are on the slide, and you see the two yellow icons. And note the Western Branch Reservoir. That is the western branch of the Nansman River coming out of the reservoir. And you'll note that where the mouse is, there's a field there. So they will drill into that field and they will drill underneath the western branch of the Navsun, underneath the tidal wetlands, and they will exit in that field where the cursor is pointed. Then they will re-drill again and go down underneath the Navsun River, and the drill will surface in the field to the east. This is your schematic just showing how they avoid, in this case, both the waterway and the tidal wetlands. This is the actual plan view drawing and profile of the Navsun River crossing. And I've highlighted in red, that is both the exit pit and the bore pit to go back underneath the Navsun. So lines coming in across the western branch Navsun River and beneath the tidal wetlands and will resurface in that field. The line will then be drilled 75 feet beneath the bed of the Navsun and resurface in that field. That 75 feet is important. There is an oyster lease in this river that will be crossed by this project. There is the lease. I've talked with this gentleman. He called me this week, and he asked me specifically to confirm whether the crossing was an open cut or a drill. And we confirmed that it will be a drill, and it'll be 75 feet beneath his lease. And he is on record in a conversation with me saying he does not oppose it because of that. He does use this lease. They relay from here. The majority of the crossings that are facing you today are in the nine tidal reaches of the Commonwealth. The majority of those crossings will be established using the open cut method, two methods primarily. The slide on the left is the dam and pump method, where they put in the up and downstream sandbag coffer dam. They dewater the stream where the pipeline will be trenched across, and they pump the flow around the site. On the right is the flume through method, and that's where you have your smaller streams where the pumps simply aren't necessary. They can handle the flow of the stream through the flume method. There will be five wet crossings proposed by this project: Quaker Swamp, Butterwood, Fontaine, Tarara, and Cahoon Creek. And it's the first and last one, Quaker Swamp and Cahoon Creek. Quaker Swamp will be crossed twice, Cahoon Creek once, and those are the three additional crossings that are been tallied from 48 to 51. And in the cross section that you see, the equipment will be on mats as usual, but they will not try to dewater the site. They will trench in the wet. This was of concern to me, so I went out with Rachel Peabody from our staff. She's in the photograph to the right. The slide on the top left shows you encircled in red the two crossings of Quaker Swamp. If you look at the top slide on the right, that's Rachel standing there for scale. This is a Tupelo gum, bald cypress, forested wetland. But you'll note that they are braided streams. Those streams have a drainage area greater than 5 square miles, so that they are therefore state-owned submerged lands within this forested wetland, so they are within your jurisdiction. On the lower left is a more typical swamp condition where you don't see the braided stream, so you have both conditions. Cahoon Creek is very similar, and you'll see in the photographs lower right that it's essentially a swamp, and it is jurisdictional to this commission. We received, obviously, a heavy volume of protest. Last night, my email crashed at 8:30. The volume of traffic, the emails are still coming in as we speak. At the last count, we were at 87. That number is no longer valid. It is certainly more than that. Protestants maintain that the pipeline will negatively impact existing farms, forest, wetlands, streams, and rivers throughout Virginia. In a petition hand-delivered by the Bold Alliance on December the 21st, 2017, with 263 signatures, the Alliance argues that the pipeline will contaminate and pollute Virginia's waterways, the local aquifers, and the private wells of citizens who have no alternative water sources. They add that sediment from the pipeline construction will degrade the water quality of many pristine streams, threatening the aquatic habitats that support both non-threatened and imperiled organisms that are listed as state or federally threatened or endangered species. They conclude that the project represents an unconstitutional taking of private land for private gain and that renewable energy must be pursued to avoid environmental damage resulting from the use of fossil fuels. And I should add that I don't have a slide prepared, but we've also received a number of letters in support, and the last count, that was about 135 before my email crashed. The Department of Conservation and Recreation has provided extensive comments on the water body crossings that are jurisdictional to this board. Relative to the pipeline's likelihood for impacts to their designated stream conservation units, natural heritage resources, and threatened and endangered aquatic species. DCR recommends that to minimize adverse impacts to the aquatic ecosystem, It recommends the implementation of strict adherence to the applicable state and local erosion and sediment control, stormwater management laws and regulations. Due to the legal status of the Roanoke log perch, the dwarf wedge mussel, the Atlantic pigtoe mussel, and the green floater, DCR recommends the continued coordination with the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to ensure compliance with protected species legislation. They support adherence to the time of year restrictions for in-stream work as recommended by both the Department of Game and Fish and the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. They support the implementation of the Virginia Fish Relocation Plan and the draft 2015 Freshwater Mussel Guidelines for Virginia crossings with potential for or documented occurrences of rare, threatened, and endangered species. DCR recommends adherence to spill prevention, control, and countermeasures plan updated in the October 2017 final environmental impact statement. DCR supports the implementation of the avoidance and minimization measures, the reasonable and prudent measures, and the terms and conditions outlined in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's biological opinion of October 16, 2017, to minimize impacts to natural heritage resources. The Department of Game and Inland Fisheries has provided multiple scope and comments over a three-year period for this project. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline crosses three of their four administrative regions, one wildlife management area, and borders another. In their latest comments dated January the 8th of this year, they advised that the pipeline is proposing adherence to their recommended in-stream work time of year restrictions. And in the final environmental impact statement, which is over 1,000 pages long, there's a table that lists the 889 water bodies. And for every water body, there's a recommendation or not from the game department on as to whether or not there needs to be an in-stream work time of year restriction to protect either anadromous fishes or threatened and endangered species and or the spawning period. So that information is in that document. The applicant has requested from that 889 crossings, they've requested leniency from 64 of those crossings. Six of those crossings are jurisdictional to this board. They're on the slide in front of you. For Stewart Run and Back Creek, the first two, you'll see the green. The game department has said that the request for leniency for the in-stream work time restriction is acceptable to their program. For the remaining four, Cowpasture River, Mill Creek, Walker Creek, if I said it right, and Sturgeon Creek, they are not supporting the request for leniency due to the presence of several state or federally endangered species, the James Spiny Mussel, the Roanoke Log Perch, the Atlantic Pigtoe Mussel, and the Dwarf Wedge Mussels. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers issued its nationwide 12 permit on February the 9th of 2018 for the wetland and stream crossings associated with the project pursuant to Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. In April of 2017, the EQ certified that the nationwide 12 permit and the requirements of 9 VAC 25210-130H with additional conditions included. Accordingly, ACP's coverage under the nationwide 12 permit means that it is deemed covered under Virginia Water Permit, General Permit, pursuant to 9 VAC 25210-130J, so long as they now meet the additional conditions listed in the DEQ certificate. In addition to this approval, the State Water Control Board considered this project at hearings on December the 11th and 12th of 2017. At the conclusion of that hearing, The board issued a 401 water quality certificate with a delayed effective date conditioned on DEQ's review and final approval as required by law of the karst mitigation plan, the annual standards and specifications, the stormwater management plans, and the erosion and sediment control plans. DEQ must also report to their board and the public on the adequacy of these plans before the 401 certificate will take effect. So I'm going to move into my summary and recommendations. Provided ACP follows the recommendations of FERC and VEMS, the project's impact to tidal wetlands are anticipated to be short-term and temporary in nature. Regarding the non-tidal stream crossings, FERC staff concluded that construction and operation of ACP would result in some adverse effects, such as impacts on steep slopes and adjacent water bodies, associated aquatic resources protected by the Endangered Species Act, forest and karst cave and subterranean habitat, and the species associated with these habitats. Staff agrees with FERC and finds that the large number of stream crossings proposed by ACP will minimally result in the temporary disruption of multiple streams and their associated aquatic habitats along the proposed route during construction. We're particularly concerned about the applicant's request for leniency for the in-stream work time of year restriction for the Cowpasture River, Mill Creek, Walker Creek, and Sturgeon Creek. All four of these waterways support state or federally listed threatened and endangered species and should be afforded the highest level of protection. DJIF's recommended time of year restrictions for these four streams are designed to protect the sensitive spawning periods for those threatened and endangered species. Further, Section 29.1-570 of the Code of Virginia directs all departments, commissions, boards, authorities, agencies, offices, and institutions with any branch of state government to cooperate with the Board of Game and Inland Fisheries in carrying out the purposes of Article 6 of Title 29.1 of the Code of Virginia. Commission staff, therefore, cannot support the leniency request and concurs with all the recommendations of DJIF, DCR, and VEMS, which are designed to minimize, to the extent practical, the adverse impacts likely to occur to the 54 jurisdictional waterways and tidal wetlands impacted by the construction of this project. Accordingly, after evaluation of the merits of the project and the conditions imposed by FERC against the concerns expressed by those in opposition, as well as all the factors contained in Sections 28.2-1205 and 28.2-1302 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the permit required for this project include the following permit conditions, and there are 12. With the exception of the six stream crossings proposed to be crossed by the horizontal directional drill method and the proposed wet crossings of Quaker Swamp and Cahoon Creek, and that should read also Fontaine, Butterwood, and Terrar Creek, all in-stream construction activity shall be accomplished during the low flow periods utilizing dam and pump, flume around, or within cofferdams constructed of non-erodible materials in such a manner that no more than approximately half the width of the waterway is obstructed at any point in time. Number two, all areas of state-owned bottom and adjacent lands disturbed by this activity shall be restored to their original contours and natural conditions within 30 days from the date of completion of the authorized work. All excess material should be removed to an upland site and contained in such a manner to prevent its reentry into state waters. Number three, erosion and sediment control measures shall be in conformance with the 1992 third edition of the Virginia Erosion and Sediment Control Handbook and shall be employed throughout construction. Number four, if it is determined that blasting is necessary at any of the crossings, DJF shall be notified a minimum of 48 hours in advance of the blasting. Five, the Department of Conservation and Recreation shall be contacted for any stream crossings where karst landscape features are encountered during installation for the inspection, mitigation, and documentation. Number six, DGF shall be contacted for any work in trout waters to avoid conflict with trout stocking activities. Number seven, the permittee agrees to conduct mollusk and fish surveys and relocation efforts in the BMRC jurisdictional waterways is recommended by DGF in their collective comments to date unless specifically waived in writing. All surveys should be performed by a qualified permitted biologist no more than 6 months prior to the start of construction. Any relocation should be coordinated with DGIF and no federally listed species should be relocated without the coordination with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Number eight, Permittee agrees to adhere to the in-stream work time or restrictions for the 48 non-tidal jurisdictional stream crossings, with the exception of Stewart Run and Back Creek, as recommended by DJF, to protect state and federally listed mussel and fish species unless specifically waived in writing by DJIF. Number nine, permittee agrees to adhere to the spill prevention, control, and countermeasures plan updated in the final environmental impact statement on October 27, 2017. Number 10, a frackout contingency plan must be provided for any crossings utilizing the directional drill method to address potential frackouts or related spills associated with any directional drilling activities. The use of any additive to the drilling fluid by the contractor must comply with DEQ's approval and Form 1 certificate for this project. Number 11, the permittee shall revegetate any tidal wetland area damaged by unintentional returns of drilling fluid resulting from frackouts and all open cut crossings of tidal wetlands with the appropriate native tidal wetland species. Areas above mean high water may be seeded. Areas below mean high water shall be sprigged on 18-inch centers. These sites shall be monitored for 5 years to ensure a minimum of 80% vegetative cover is established. And lastly, the permittee shall, for the proposed open cut crossings of the Quaker Swamp, Butterwood, Fontaine, Tarara, and Cahoon Creeks, comply with the erosion and sediment control measures outlined in the April 13, 2017 memorandum from Environmental Resources Management to Dominion, as well as to the FERC wetland and water body construction and mitigation procedures. Any trench excavation for the subject waterways may be initiated only after verifying that no significant rainfall events are forecasted for the time period necessary to complete the open-cut trench, pipe installation, and backfilling operation. And lastly, staff recommends a one-time royalty in the amount of $28,932 for the encroachment of the pipeline beneath 9,644 linear feet of state-owned subacreous land at a rate of $3 per square foot. Commissioner, that concludes my briefing.
I assume that there's some questions from the commission. Are there questions from the commission? Mrs. Everett.
Regarding condition 11, the revegetation and monitoring, obviously this area is prone to Phragmites influence. Without reseeding or potential disturbance, do they expect that Phragmites might even expand, or is that going to be treated as part of the condition?
All four of the sites are heavily dominated by Phragmites. In my professional opinion, it doesn't matter what you put in there, you will not, in that patch density, there is very little chance you will prevent. It's already Phragmites almost 100%. There are some salt bushes. There is some native vegetation, but the majority of the site is dominated by Phragmites, and it's been my experience that at that patch density, you can't not keep it coming back in there. So we VIMS addresses this in their comments. There is a hope that they will come in with the native species and that some of that might persist, but I think VIMS calls it out in their report that they expect Phragmites to take the area back over. And trust me, the crossing of east of Jarvis Road, originally I thought it was going to be further down the gut where we had a very bona fide, legitimate as far as, you know, native species. We had Spartina altiflora, Spartina sororitas, Spartina patens. And I would have had a very deep concern there to eliminate Phragmites from coming back into that area. But when we actually walked the pipeline alignment, we were so close to the subdivision that there's a stand of trees. The Phragmites is running right up against it, and that is where they're going with the pipeline. They're in it was probably 90%+ Phragmites for the entire site where we were delineating it. Okay. Now,
so Mr. Leppert.
So the revegetation would be the marsh elder, groundsel tree, or obviously where relevant in terms of salinity, salt meadow hay or cordgrass, correct? But again, likely not to survive.
Yeah, we're not going to ask them to plant Phragmites, that's for sure. But the expectations are that they're going. The most important thing, in my opinion, from doing this for as long as I have, is to get anything with root established because the threat is the settlement. Given the phragmites that's in there now, I don't think there's anything you can do to prevent it from coming back in there. So I was even told by one wetlands professional that just sow it with rye. Get something that immediately stabilizes the site because Mother Nature is going to plant it for you. But it's been my experience, and when I've seen phrag removed, 3 weeks later it's knee-high. The rhizome and root matter and seed out there is such that it's coming back.
Mrs. Everett.
So I appreciate that challenge there, but you're not suggesting be revegetated rye.
No, there's native plants. No, we've discussed this with Dominion. There's a contract. We can't recommend one vendor over another, but I did go as far as to find sources of wetland seed mixes that I prefer seeding versus sprigging because sprigging is typically on 18-inch centers. You leave a lot of bare soil. If you seed it, with the exception of the areas that inundate the site with the power line that I showed you, there's a gut that comes through there that ebbs bare and has a mean high water fall. There it needs to be sprigged because it will wash the seed away. But for the balance of that site, by the way, the balance of that site is mostly non-tidal wetlands because you have the gut going through the middle of it and then the slope goes uphill. It grades quickly from tidal wetlands to non-tidal wetlands. So they'll be disturbing both, and we don't have the authority of the non-tidal wetlands. So my opinion and my preference would be that they seed everything that the tide doesn't fall on twice a day and that they sprig that area because that would wash the seed away and that an appropriate wetland seed mix be used that's native vegetation, if that helps.
Thank you.
Mrs. Everett.
Thank you. And the blasting notification for DGIF, is DGIF comfortable with 48 hours notice, or would they prefer more time?
That condition comes straight from their office.
Okay.
It is, again, we talked about it in the January hearing. That's one of our standard in-stream conditions. Anybody that installs a utility in Virginia has that condition placed on them by this commission.
Are there further questions from the commission? Mr. Ballard.
In your write-up, you mentioned you have a concern about Quaker Swamp and Cahoon Creek utilizing the wet cut crossing methodology. And we talked about that a little bit, but are there any specific permit recommendations you'd have on that, and what are we doing to address
those
concerns?
Yes, sir. I would call your attention to condition 12. And just so you'll know, you're looking at the guide that resulted in a meeting in Richmond with the Corps of Engineers, DCR, the Health Department, DEQ, and I might be forgetting one or two other agencies, but I called the applicant. I said, I have a concern about these crossings. It resulted in this meeting. We met for over 2 hours, and what came out of that meeting is Condition 12, because what we did agree with all of the agencies in the same room is that time is of the essence when it comes to getting through these areas. The longer they're in there, the more potential there is for rainfall events to come through while the area is denuded. So we had to weigh our preference to do things in the dry versus that would lengthen the time they're in there. These are, again, the bald cypress, tupelo gum, forested wetlands. The longer they're in there, the more there's a threat downstream with sediment. So the agencies agreed to condition 12 based on the fact that would get them through there and out of there as fast as possible. And we even added the condition that they're not allowed to go in there and cut that trench if rain is forecasted within, I think it's 5 days. So they're going to literally be watching the weather a week out before we let them go in there if you approve this as recommended by staff with the condition 12.
Further questions? Mr. Packard.
Well, I want to follow up on that. And maybe people in Richmond are better at forecasting rain than I am, but I never know when it's going to rain, to be honest with you. And so why not just do the directional drill method and not take the chance of sedimentation further downstream?
Absolutely, that is an option. And I think I would let the applicant respond to that. We did discuss that.
Mrs. Everett.
Further on the HGD, and I don't know if this applies to condition 10, but VIMS recommended Western Branch of the Nansemond, the Nansemond Southern Branch of Elizabeth used the HDD method. And was that agreed to or a condition?
The applicant brought that in on their own.
Okay.
VIMS was supporting that method, is how it is read in the actual comments. The fact that they're avoiding both the stream and those are very large wetland complexes on that watershed. I don't know how many hundreds of feet, but it would obviously be not only damaging to the wetland, it would be a mess to go through as well with equipment. So for their own reasons in working with FERC, the applicant has proffered to cross those by directional drill.
Further questions from the commission? No more questions. Well, that was simple. Thank you, Mr. Owen.
Yes, sir.
Is the applicant present? Represented?
We are.
Would you please come forward, sir? And your team, who might be testifying at this point?
One last thing.
Yes, sir.
As I said, the email traffic, the mail traffic on both support and in opposition to this project has been
remarkable.
Yes. And what I have in my hand are the additional letters in support and in opposition that were not included in your binder on your desk. In addition to this, there will be even more that are sitting in our email archives.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Gentlemen here, if you're going to testify or you may be asked questions, please raise your right hand and I'll swear you in. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God? Terrific. Would you one by one state your names for the record into the microphone?
Spencer Trischel, Dominion Energy.
Thank you.
Richard Gangle, Dominion Energy.
Gregory Supi, Dominion Energy.
Colin Olmos, Dominion Energy.
Thank you, gentlemen. What would you like to add from the staff presentation? What else do we need to know here to make an informed decision?
Well, sir, we don't have an official presentation to provide. We're here to answer questions. We appreciate your time and consideration of our application.
Terrific. There likely will be questions. Are there questions from the board? Mr. Ballard.
For the two wet crossings we referred to earlier, Quaker Swamp and Cahoon Creek, I believe, did you consider the directional drill method, and why did you choose to conduct a wet cut there?
So, yes, several different methods were considered there. And this is a sort of an inundated water body, inundated stream. The challenge is if you do any sort of a drill, you run the risk of having that inadvertent return, and then the process of cleaning up that inadvertent return, which we're required to do, would essentially cause more damage than it would be just to do the open cut through there. And it's, again, as the gentleman said, it's the time that we spend in there. It reduces the amount of time that we're in there.
Further questions from the board? Mrs. Everett.
So time meaning cost savings? Is that what the...
No, not a cost savings mechanism, ma'am. It's just the time that we're in there. So, again, if you... the amount of time that you spend doing a drill versus the amount of time that you spend doing the open cut method, it's greatly reduced, and so that impact on the water body itself, to say the impact on the water body is much less. If we have an inadvertent return where they're much longer to do the cleanup, and we're affecting a much larger area, we have a very limited disturbance that we're allowed to operate in during the construction.
Further questions from the board? Mr. Tanker.
And with the open cut method, how far will you be below the bottom surface? I know it says, I think, 75 feet in the directional drill method.
It's a minimum of 5 feet below the bottom of the stream bed.
5 feet.
Yes, sir.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to open up the floor here for some public comment here. Let me reiterate that What we're looking for is not a filibuster, but we want to have an informed decision. We want to hear from you. Let's take this in order. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify in favor of this project? Okay, please come forward.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Let me swear you in here. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And I'm going to swear you all in one at a time. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jim Kibler. I'm president of Virginia Natural Gas. We serve about 1 million Virginians. We're about 300 metered premises from Hanover east of Virginia Beach. We've been before you before on permits like this. I appreciate your work and your service to Virginia. At the outset, I just want to say the purpose of me being here today is to impress upon you, hopefully, the absolute criticality of this project to southeastern Virginia. Unlike others that may speak today, I have a statutory obligation imposed by the Code of Virginia and the State Corporation Commission to deliver safe and reliable natural gas service to keep homes warm and businesses operating. In my opinion, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is not only needed, it's vital if we're going to continue to serve southeastern Virginia. We're a public service corporation chartered in 1850 by the General Assembly, and we're one of the oldest corporations in existence in Virginia today. We provide an essential service to this area that needs additional gas infrastructure to meet essential human needs. We've laid a lot of pipelines since 1850. We've got 5,600 miles of pipe that we operate every day in Virginia, and more permits from you than I can count. So we do appreciate your oversight and your willingness to take the time to do this right and help the applicant do it right. During the polar vortex, we were required to curtail over 100 of the largest employers in Hampton Roads. And that includes military installations, manufacturing plants, and others, merely to preserve the minimum operating pressure that we need to serve homes, schools, hospitals, and nursing homes in our service territory on the coldest winter days. And those curtailments were not unique. We've outgrown the pipeline capacity into this region. And as recently as January of this year, that very cold stretch of the first week of January during the bomb cyclone, we made additional interruptions pursuant to State Corporation Commission rules. What keeps me awake at night is the potential that a service interruption on one of the interstate pipelines that serves our region, which is, as you know, a geographic cul-de-sac. There's only one way in. That would mean the loss of service to thousands of homes on a cold winter night. We need the Atlantic Coast Pipeline to provide additional capacity into this region to serve cold winter days, but also further economic development. Now, we've done our part. In the 90s, we built our joint-use pipeline that runs from Quantico down through the peninsula, crosses through the Chickahominy Swamp, and many other water bodies as permitted by this commission. And in the early 2000s, we extended it under Hampton Roads, a 24-mile horizontal directional drill that this commission permitted, the longest in history in the United States, by the way. But we're out of options, and we need additional upstream capacity to serve Hampton Roads. I appreciate your time and your service to Virginia. I ask for your favorable action on the permit.
Thank you very much. By the way, if anybody on the board has a question of a witness here, pop up here so I can call on you. Who's next? Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you guide it?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Judd White.
Welcome.
Good morning. Mr. Commissioner and Associate Commission Board members. My name is Judd White, and I'm a retired environmental manager with over 35 years of experience in focusing on water quality issues in the Commonwealth. I do have a PhD in public policy and administration from Virginia Commonwealth University. My dissertation years ago was dealing with innovative ways to improve water quality at less cost, and a big example of that is water trading, which you probably have heard of. I also taught a graduate course for 10 years as an adjunct professor at VCU, exploring how business and environmental interests can coexist in a complex and challenging society as we have today. I have reviewed the VMRC joint permit application related documents submitted by ACP to install a natural gas pipeline beneath non-tidal and tidal streams along the pipeline corridor in the Commonwealth. As VMRC regulates activity in state-owned subaqueous bottomlands, this application is an important step, as you know, in moving forward in the extensive permitting and authorization process that has been underway for years. There's an extensive body of information that I looked at before I came here. A major part of the ACP authorization process was approval of the final FEIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, approved by FERC last July, and they concluded that the avoidance, minimization, and mitigation measures being used can successfully reduce impacts to less than significant levels. The stream crossings and methods identified under VMRC jurisdiction have been reviewed by multiple state and federal agencies for any possible impacts on wetlands and aquatic resources. In particular, there's been consultation with Game Department, BDGIF, Fish and Wildlife, NOAA, et cetera, to ensure the protection of endangered and threatened species, as well as overall fish health and spawning. On several crossings, the method called HDD, the horizontal directional drill method, will be used, that is often the method preferred by agencies due to its typically lower environmental impact. ACP submitted a horizontal drilling fluid monitoring operations contingency plan to FERC and has been subsequently approved. The plan addresses the proper response to what's commonly referred to as inadvertent returns, including the discontinuance of drilling if necessary, if needed. If one occurs, ACP will immediately notify the appropriate agency for proper responses and cleanup if necessary. Importantly, there will be routine visual monitoring where horizontal drilling occurs to assess conditions and ensure water quality and aquatic life is protected to the maximum extent feasible. I have worked in my career with most of the Virginia resource agencies in the Commonwealth, and as well as those representing ACP, and I have found them to be professional and conscientious in conducting their duties to protect the natural resources of the Commonwealth. I do recommend that the board authorizes the activity in state-owned subaqueous bottomlands associated with this project, along with the protection measures that have been identified. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You, God. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is George Hudgens. My address is 203 The Main in Williamsburg, 23185. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you here today. First, let me say that I am very familiar with the important role the commission plays in protecting the Commonwealth's natural resources. I saw the commission's dedication and expertise at work many times during the years I had the privilege of serving on your recreational fishing advisory board for a number of years as chair. So I'm sure you will apply that same dedication and expertise today as you consider the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. At the end of your deliberations, I'm confident that you will find the pipeline can be built in a way that fully protects the Commonwealth's marine resources. So I respectfully ask you to approve the two Atlantic requests before you today. The authorization for the project to pass under the beds of streams and rivers along its route, and the permit allowing it to cross tidal wetlands and the city of Chesapeake. There are several reasons why I have confidence that the project will do no harm to these important resources. First, it is worth noting that the pipeline has undergone some of the most comprehensive and rigorous environmental reviews in Virginia's history and possibly in the nation. For example, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission conducted a review that spanned 3.5 years. At the end, FERC's final environmental impact statement concluded the avoidance, minimization, and mitigation measures proposed by the developer would reduce environmental impacts to less than significant levels. A few months after issuing the final environmental statement, FERC approved a certificate allowing the project to move forward to construction. Also, our own State Water Control Board and Department of Environmental Quality has looked long and hard at the project. After very thorough studies, the Water Board took the important step of issuing the water quality certification for the project back in December. DEQ has conducted an unprecedented thorough review of the ACP's erosion and sediment control and stormwater pollution prevention plans. Finally, each of the water body crossings under the Commission's jurisdiction has been thoroughly analyzed by the VMRC staff, Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, as well as federal agencies including the Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. ACP, working with Game and Inland Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife, has proposed very thorough measures to ensure the health of protected species, including relocating fish and shellfish during construction, if necessary. ACP intends to minimize stream bed impacts by using horizontal directional drilling through the measures to ensure the health of the protected areas, including relocating fish and shellfish during construction, if necessary. ACP intends to minimize stream bed impact by using horizontal drilling. For years, I have enjoyed the beautiful streams and rivers of the Commonwealth. During those years, I've worked hard to protect them, helping ensure that Virginians can continue to enjoy fishing and boating in the future just as they do today. Construction of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is a win-win opportunity. It represents environmentally sound construction while providing fuel with the lowest carbon dioxide emissions of all fuels, thereby protecting our rivers and the bay. The lower emissions will greatly assist the seagrass plantings funded by the Commission and administered by VIMS. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today, and I very much appreciate the Commission's dedication to protecting the Commonwealth's waters. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth of God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Miles Morin. I'm a Virginia native and resident of Richmond, and I represent the Virginia Petroleum Council. Before you today for your consideration is a request from ACP to install a natural gas pipeline beneath the beds of 48 non-tidal and 3 tidal beds. Natural gas is safe, inexpensive, abundant, reliable, and an important piece of environmental stewardship. It is responsible for about 50% of global crop yields, preserving millions of square miles of wilderness for being clear-cut for farmland. Technological breakthroughs in the oil and gas industry have opened access to vast stores of domestic gas, saving the average American family over $1,300 in energy costs in 2015. In Virginia, one-third of all households use natural gas, and demand increased by 50% between 2004 and 2014. Its use in power generation tripled in the past 15 years, now accounting for 40% of our Commonwealth's electricity generation. The use of natural gas has improved our regional environment and air quality. Project opponents use alarming rhetoric that may make you assume that this is the first pipeline ever to be built in Virginia. In reality, Virginia has over 3,000 miles of natural gas pipelines crossing every part of the state and over 30,000 miles of gas distribution and service lines. ACP has been one of the most scrutinized, studied projects in the history of the Commonwealth. With over 300 route changes to accommodate environmental sensitivities and over 100,000 pages of reports, each crossing under VMRC's jurisdiction has been thoroughly reviewed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, in addition to the review of VMRC staff. In addition, ACP has been, for the last 3.5 years, under a rigorous and extensive environmental review by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. FERC issued its final environmental impact statement this past July. Their statement concluded that the avoidances, minimization, and mitigation measures identified by ACP can successfully reduce impacts to less than significant levels. Additionally, the crossings you're considering are also subject to a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers stream and wetland crossing permit and the Virginia DEQ's 401 water quality certificate, both permits which ACP has received. I ask that you approve these thoroughly reviewed crossings today so this project can continue to construction and begin supplying fuel for the needed energy generation for families and businesses throughout the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got?
So I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Joan LaRocque. I'm a resident of Virginia Beach. I'm here in support of VMRC approving the Atlantic Coast Pipeline request to construct the pipeline through rivers, streams, and wetlands that fall under your jurisdiction. I live on the Lynn Haven River and appreciate all the support that you have for our aquatic environment. Actually, I live right around the corner from the Brock Center, and I'm a supporter of Lynn Haven River now. I moved to Hampton Roads in 2008 from Northern Virginia, in large part for the natural beauty and the resources the area has to offer. I support Dominion Energy and their objectives to promote energy conservation and use more renewable energy. However, realistically, having an adequate supply of natural gas is crucial to achieving those objectives. The transition from coal to renewables covers a large gap, and I believe natural gas is the best environmental choice to fill the gap. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline is critical to Hampton Roads to ensure we will have an adequate and reliable energy supply. I worked at US EPA in Washington, D.C. for a decade, and I appreciate the importance of protecting the environment and meeting or exceeding regulatory requirements. Each water and wetlands crossing under review today has also been reviewed by other participating agencies to ensure no stone is left unturned. Each crossing under VMRC's jurisdiction has been thoroughly reviewed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Army Corps of Engineers, and Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, in addition to the extensive review by VMRC staff. The time of year restrictions as to when work can occur in streams will be imposed to protect spawning. And again, I'm very supportive of that. Protected species have been documented and plans drafted to ensure their health. Aquatic relocation plans prior to construction have been developed in consultation with agencies. The horizontal drilling that has been proposed for several crossings where other construction techniques would be more intrusive. While the terrain in Hampton Roads is different, the National Park Service granted the horizontal drilling under the Blue Ridge Parkway. And also earlier this week, as you probably know, Norfolk approved the ACP crossing under their drinking water reservoirs in Suffolk. FERC has approved a monitoring operations and contingency plan for directional drilling associated with the ACP. The four wetlands crossings in Chesapeake can be done with only temporary impacts by minimized construction widths, mat used for equipment travel, and disturbed areas fully restored. Construction methods are designed to ensure the pipeline does not change the hydrology. The VMRC provides an essential role to protecting Virginia's water resources and ecosystem. I'm confident that your review to date has been thorough. I believe the body of regulatory work and review done over the past 3 years has been extensive, and simply ask that you approve the two permits before you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Alexis Jones, 11300 Purdy Road, Jarrett, Virginia, in Greensville County. To the members of the commission, associate commission, and regulatory agencies present. I am a senior environmentalist and professional soil scientist for an engineering firm in Southside, Virginia. I am also an elected official serving for Greensville County. I have been serving Central and Southside Virginia in this capacity for the past 12 years. As a professional soil scientist, I spend my days assisting entities such as Dominion, Microsoft, localities, small and large developers, and individual landowners in obtaining their environmental permits. I have a vast knowledge base and experience in wetlands and waters of the U.S. delineations, Section 404 permitting, threatened endangered species reviews, Section 104 historic reviews and permitting, water withdrawal permits, stormwater and erosion sediment control permits, and so on. I am myself am one of those that is out in the field completing the work, spending my evenings in the swamps, documenting barking tree frogs, endangered bats, overseeing mussel relocations in rivers, relocating cemeteries, determining the water body limits versus a wetland and an upland, and assisting the applicants in obtaining these necessary permits. We are upheld to the highest standards by our local, state, and federal regulations. ACP has requested authorization from the Virginia Marine Resources Commission to install a natural gas pipeline in the bed of 51 non-tidal streams and rivers. I have reviewed these documents submitted. VMRC is tasked with the responsibility to regulate activity in state-owned subaqueous bottomlands, and VMRC is the authority that covers the crossing methods and any possible impacts on aquatic life as a result of these crossings. Each crossing under VMRC's jurisdiction has been thoroughly reviewed by the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, and the Department of Game and Atlantic Coastal Pipeline have gone through rigorous reviews encompassing thousands of pages of documents to get where they are today and will continue to be diligent in their permitting process and will continue through their construction phases. Dominion has proven to us the Commonwealth of Virginia to be very environmentally compliant despite their magnitude. I have actually worked firsthand with Dominion in Greensville County under the construction of their gas power plant and all the infrastructure coming to serve that facility. I have the utmost respect for this group and their commitment to the Commonwealth, our localities, and our citizens. Because of them and others, we are growing economically and thriving even in rural Southside Virginia. I fully support Dominion Energy and the Atlantic Coastal Pipeline. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Rob Little. I'm Vice President for Risch Equipment Company, a Virginia-based company. We have multiple locations throughout the state to include a location here in Chesapeake. And I just wanted to, I will be brief because many of the points have been addressed. And I don't want to hash.
We appreciate
a lot of the
brevity.
Same things, but being in this business for many years, I've seen many of these projects. I've seen the before and the after. And I can attest to the after, the sense of urgency and the competence of the folks doing the projects to make sure that the wetlands are restored and that things are put back the way they should be. I know we're always striking a balance between economics and environment. I personally grew up in East North Carolina near the coast, so I understand the importance of it. But I can say seeing these things firsthand, you've obviously heard the amount of due diligence that's gone into this. The recommendations from your staff that are tied into it, I think when you listen to that, it's clear that that environmental impact is a major component of this, and people recognize that. But at the end of the day, this is a project that's much needed, which has also been attested to, and I stand here in support of it and would urge you to do the same.
Thank you. In favor of the project?
In favor.
Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Bob Peyer, P-E-Y-E-R.
Thank you.
I live in Chesapeake, Virginia, but down by the locks. My boat's on the water right now waiting for the wind to die down and the weather to warm up. I'm an operating engineer with the International Union of Operating Engineers. I'm here to represent the laborers, the teamsters, the operators, and the welders that will put this project in the ground. I do directional drill work specifically. We just completed a project underneath the Nasman River for Colonial, under the supervision of Michael's Pipeline, 9,200 feet. I think we went 90 feet underneath the surface of the river, underneath the oyster beds. I'm sure you people had a lot to do with that. No problems. Completed on time. We drilled right behind the high school, or the grade school. We set up barricades for sound. We did the tie-ins. We had more inspectors at the tie-ins than we had workers. I just want to speak to what we do as professionals. The power company has gone out and signed a PLA with the four major groups, the laborers, the teamsters, the operators, and the welders. So they're showing their commitment. We're professionally trained. We're just not fly-by-night guys. We travel all over the U.S. putting pipelines in the ground. I've worked on river projects under the Illinois River in Ottawa with Quanta Services, U.S. Pipe, worked with Michaels in Pittsburgh underneath the rivers. Like I say, we just finished this project here in Suffolk. I'm just here today to tell you that we are professional. We do take it personally. I take it personally because I live here. I'm going to be on these waters fishing and doing pleasure boating. So we're here to tell you that we can do the job if you'll let us.
Thank you, sir. Mrs. Everett?
I was too slow in responding to Mr. Kemper. I had a question for him.
Okay.
I left at this point, I think, but could I potentially ask that question to Dominion in case they might know the answer?
That I want to get information here, and if you have a question, I would like you to get an answer. Okay. So let's ask the question first, and then we'll see who can give you an answer.
Sure. So to Mr. Kemper's point about the need for domestic in southeastern Virginia natural gas for homes and businesses, I just wanted to explore more of the protected use of this natural gas and whether it was for export, domestic use, what combination thereof, what's the actual intended outcome of this.
Please refresh our memories with your name, sir.
My name is Richard Gangle with Dominion Energy.
Thank you.
So your question was the end use of the gas.
Correct.
That will be transported by Atlantic Coast Pipeline. We have firm customers on the pipeline. The majority of the gas is either going to VNG, as mentioned earlier, or to Duke Energy for use to supplement the removal of coal units from their energy grid. So at this time, none of the customers we have are proposing that we know of to export any of this gas internationally, which I believe is what your question was going.
Thank you, Vince.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Any further questions on that? Thank you, sir. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify in favor of this project? In favor? Oh, okay. Let's not jump the gun here. How about a show of hands? How many people here wish to testify in opposition to this project? All right. Well, let's have at it. Who wants to be first? You're first up. Let me swear you in. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
I do swear.
Please state your name for the record.
Yes, I also swear that my name is Walton Shepherd. I'm with the Natural Resources Defense Council here from Richmond.
Well,
speaking here, thank you. Speaking here today on behalf of our 12,000 members across the Commonwealth. 5 points I want to make, and I won't filibuster. I will say to start, we are pleased to see most of the staff's recommendations. And we generally agree with them, and we salute them for their hard and diligent work. We do disagree with one of the recommendations, but I'll get to that last. First, I would like to say that under the MRC's own guidelines, you are unable to take action on this project today because today is a special meeting and not a, quote, monthly meeting as required under your subaqueous guidelines. As adopted in March 1986 and updated in November 2005, and stated in Section C-6, it says that Virginia's Administrative Process Act, quote, requires that any permit issued by the MRC must be approved at one of the monthly commission meetings. The commission normally meets on the fourth Tuesday of each month, end quote. This meeting is designated as a, quote, special meeting, end quote, and not a monthly meeting as defined by the MRC's guidelines. As you're probably aware, the next monthly meeting is scheduled for March 27th. I'll point out that this is a very good thing that you're unable to act today on this permit because you now have the opportunity to fully review and properly review the record before you, including information provided today and including information provided yesterday that you haven't had a chance to review yet, and thus avoid an arbitrarily denied or approved permit. I'll now review some of the gaps in the record that can be filled so that you may more properly vote at a later date at a monthly meeting as is required by your guidelines. First, you can't currently approve or deny the permit as filed due to the applicant's unjustified and unexplained use of extensive trenching. At about 7 out of 8 crossings, trenching is proposed. As you know, the MRC states a preference in your own guidelines for HDD rather than trenching. The applicant does state a variety of broad reasons not to utilize HDD. However, the MRC lacks a specific site-specific information to conclude that each trenched crossing, specifically, rather than HDD, is justified based on those site-specific circumstances for any variety of reasons. And that use of trenching does not unreasonably interfere with designated uses at each of those crossings. So you can't make your public trust assessment without that site-specific information. In other words, your review is not complete yet until you have that information. We heard earlier, for example, a verbal question about the wet cut crossings. That's the kind of information specific to each crossing. You need more information like that that was discussed earlier. So any approval of such extensive trenching would currently be arbitrary and insufficiently supported by the information available to you and other interested parties. This is particularly true for the Appomattox, the Nottoway, the Marin, the Cap-Hasher, and the Cow-Pasher rivers. Those have significant designated uses, and without further information on why HDD is not being used at those high-value locations, I would recommend that the more information is needed to that. This arbitrary use of trenching is also true for the open cut method used across the four tidal wetland sites. Then the same lastly on the trenching versus HDD, the wet cut crossings at Quaker Swamp Twice and the Cahoon, we heard earlier the explanation was something about time in the water body would be higher than if they used HDD. The entire point of HDD is that you're not in the water body. So that explanation actually does not, no pun intended, hold water. So that's the kind of inquiry that needs to be made for all of these trenched non-HDD crossings. My third point is the lack of information on impacts specifically to the calf pasture and Deerfield Valley. We submitted a report yesterday. Those are two areas that are particularly impacted due to the high number of crossings in that specific location, the calf pasture and the Deerfield Valley beneath it. Trout Unlimited has also submitted information about their high priority designated use is trout waters that is relevant, and I would encourage you to review before your next regularly scheduled meeting. Next to last, you don't have sufficient information before you to assess the impact of drinking water supplies, specifically in Emporia and in Stanton. Also, the report we submitted yesterday has more information about those drinking water supplies and the greater inquiry that needs to be made. Lastly, I hate to quibble with the staff after they've worked so hard, but we do disagree with the 48-hour notice requirement for blasting. Your own guidelines require a week of notice before blasting may occur in any of Virginia's waterways. So thank you for your time, and I again request that you not deny today or approve today this permit so that you remain in compliance with your own guidelines. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. And should I distribute my written comments?
Yeah.
For the record?
That would be great.
Okay.
You just have one copy?
I have several copies.
Okay. Enough for the board?
Yep.
Great. Thank you, Jamie. Please come forward. Let me swear you in. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record.
Or I affirm.
You affirm. That's
or
perfectly,
I affirm.
Perfectly good.
Anyone else? I don't know. We have that option, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm God-fearing, but we have long debates about what that is. As I'm here to emphasize, I'm Henry Howell. I've been helping people try to stop this pipeline for the last 4 years. I'm an eminent domain attorney. I represent property owners against the government. And those entities that have been delegated the power of eminent domain, such as Atlantic Coast Pipeline under the Natural Gas Act. Let's remember that they're only here. All these corporations that have spoken, they have one duty, make money for their stockholders. Now, if it's great goodwill generating to do all this, and that helps the profits, and they keep their stockholders happy with that, fine. But the number one reason is profit. This is a money-making proposition. We all know fossil fuels are near the end. When our young people come up, there won't be a pipeline approved for natural gas in this nation. They're at the end of their life. Now, I come here to say all this talk about what they need and how helpful it is from everyone in favor of it. That's been decided. Your only job, I think, is to look out for nature. And let's remember, if you weren't here and the other agencies weren't here, we remember how corporations going for profit are driven and act. And remember Keypone on the James River? You all remember that. So I'm here for a lot of people, I think, who couldn't make it. Maybe they'd given up, but the fight was amazing. The arousal of people. Democracy at work, it's a beautiful thing. And we have ACP to thank for generating this. And those kids sitting in those trees, trying to stop them from going through our national forest. So I say, you have our power. You have the people's power we've given you. Our Constitution says all power is vested in the people and therefore derived from the people. That magistrates are their servants and amenable to them. There's only three words we need to know to understand the United States Constitution that I love. And why do I love it? Because unlike other nations' constitutions, our people believe in it. And enough people in government believe in it, so it means something. But I say there are only three words you need to know to understand the whole United States Constitution. And that's we the people. Thank you very much.
Can you raise your right hand? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help God?
Yes, I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Nancy Sorrells. I'm the co-chair of the Augusta County Alliance. I live in Augusta County, Virginia. And Augusta County Alliance is a community group dedicated to preserving our rural landscape, economy, clean air, and water. I'm also a recovering supervisor, having spent 8 years on the Augusta County Board of Supervisors and 3 years on the Service Authority. I can tell you that Augusta's leaders and citizens are pro-water. The county has invested millions in studying, documenting, and protecting its water. No water flows into Augusta County. It all flows out. We are the headwaters of the Chesapeake Bay. In Augusta County, our water is threatened by a proposal to insert a 42-inch high-pressure natural gas pipeline into the ground through 57 miles of fragile karst and precious water, through sinkholes and springs, 189 stream crossings and 43 wetlands in Augusta County. And I can tell you, contrary to what you've heard here today, those 189 stream crossings do not have individual permits, and nobody has looked at the individual stream crossings. Today, you are looking at issuing a permit for the ACP to cross the bottomlands of 48 state waters with drainage areas greater than 5 square miles and 3 tidal springs, streams. Of those 51, 26, over half, are in Augusta County. 17 more are in counties that border us, Bath, Highland, and Nelson, and 10 more are in the next county over, Buckingham. And yet, despite our requests that you hold this hearing in our community, and that you come and visit our waters, you chose to ignore the citizens and that are most affected by this project. In fact, it has been chosen that we have to drive hours, some of us 4 and 5 hours. We went 4 hours this morning. And until we got to this meeting, we had been told that we were limited to 3 minutes, and even unlike at the DEQ hearings, we couldn't even pull our minutes to give you sufficient factual information. I ask, is that right? It certainly hinders your ability to gather all the necessary information, especially given the fact that your agency has not done so in advance. Among some of the Virginia citizens who are concerned about the pipeline are some DEQ employees. They have been rushed to complete work and pressured to rubber stamp Dominion's demands. They have mentioned the impossibility of safeguarding the Commonwealth's resources because of mislabeled maps, overlays, and differences in milepost markers that they can't resolve. The gap between the best laid and carefully monitored plans and what is actually happening here is huge. Affected landowners have been insulted by this process. They have sent lengthy letters to you outlining concerns and presented information that included photographs, measurements, hydrologist reports. These letters were simply stamped protest, and then a count of such letters was presented to you in a report. These are not protest letters. These are letters giving scientific information relating to a proposed state permit for construction that could negatively and permanently impact our state's shared public resource. That they are thrown into a pile and tallied as pro and con in no way guides you toward a proper and thoughtful decision. Also, Dominion has chosen, as you've heard today, to do open-cut operations rather than HDD on over half of the streams you're looking at. Why? And the answer is because it will cost them less and be faster. And the fact that HDD is a better option environmentally is not considered. I don't need to remind you that cost to an applicant is not a consideration when protecting Virginia's public resources. And finally, affected landowners were told in writing the following. A public hearing will be scheduled before the full commission to weigh all the evidence and make a determination. You will be informed of the date of such a hearing in the event you may wish to be present. I've got a letter that I'll give you from just one landowner, but this happened multiple times with our landowners in Augusta County. They were never informed of this hearing, and thus they couldn't be here. You wonder why we don't have many people here? It's because of that reason, among many others. It never happened. Given the fact that there were virtually no site visits to our region, that you were given minimal survey detail, that no soil samples were ever taken, that affected landowners and the affected communities were not given due process or even access to the process, the logical course of action and the one that is fair to affected landowners and the surrounding communities who share the precious public resource of our state-regulated waters is for you to either delay or deny this permit without prejudice. That allows time to properly gather the data needed to make an informed and transparent decision and to properly allow citizen input in the places that will be most impacted. We in Augusta County want to offer our resources and invite you to personally visit our 26 jurisdictional waters and talk to the people most affected. As you know, the water quality permit is, at this point, unlike what you've also heard today, conditional because the ENS plans, the karst, the stormwater, and the slope issues remain unresolved. Wouldn't it be better to wait until that process is complete? I want to say that each of the crossings in Augusta County and all of these crossings that you're considering today is a special place for many people. Here in Augusta County, these are the headwaters, the streams for which the James and the Shenandoah River flow. I just want to leave you with these headwaters so you know these special places. There's Hamilton Branch that will be crossed twice, Tizzle Branch, Benson Run, Calf Pasture River, which will be crossed six times, Jennings Branch, which will be crossed twice, Middle River, which will be crossed three times, Folly Mills Creek, which will be crossed twice, Christians Creek, which will be crossed twice, South River, which will be crossed twice, Mills Creek, which will be crossed twice, Orbank Creek, and Back Creek. Thank you very much for your time. And I've got two copies of my packet. Then my printer did what your email did. It crashed.
Keep one for the record. Thank you, ma'am.
Hello. I'm Sandy Green. I'm from Augusta County, too.
Let me swear you in first. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, the best I know.
Thank you. Please, state your name again. Sorry,
Sandy Green from Mount Sydney in Augusta County. I want to invite you, but it has to be only a few at a time, to the Shenandoah Valley with me. And you can come in a plug-in hybrid car, and you can stay at my house that's solar. We're trying our best with solar co-ops to screw down the carbon dioxide so that we have less ocean acidification. And if you come visit me, you'll have to bring some seafood. Would you please? I know a great put-in place on the Calf Pasture River, and I'm speaking for the Calf Pasture River. And we could take a beautiful canoe ride if we get a little rain this weekend. The bloodroot's coming out. The turkeys are getting a little bit running around, pretty neat. And in that area, fisher have come back, which is like a big mink, which hadn't been in Virginia at all. We thought it was extinct in Virginia. And we could take out at 40 acres that I do own on the Calf Pasture River. It would be a beautiful float. And it would be my pleasure to host you, and I do hope you do come. But between that put-in and take-out are the six crossings of 42-inch pipeline that you will be looking to permit and 30 others in tributaries to the Calf Pasture River along the Marble Valley and Deerfield Corridor. This is in the George Washington National Forest. It's a biodiversity hotspot of the world. I'd love to take you there. I'd love to show you the natural beauty and also the farming resources. But I really don't think I want to if there are 36 crossings where we can actually take the canoe ride. And I'm afraid we'll have to stay and go somewhere else a little bit. But thank you very much for considering the natural resources and your headwaters in this permit.
Thank you. And thank you for the invitation. I may have some time free next week. Oh, come on. Give it up. That was pretty good.
Well played.
Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the true stuff you got?
So help me God.
Please state your name for the record.
Christopher Vacher. That's V as in Victor, A-C-H-E-R.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I stand here because I love the state of Virginia.
So do we.
Yeah. I mean, we love it, right? I wasn't even born here. I chose to move here, and I still choose to live here. I love Highland County, where this comes in. I should be at the Maple Festival this weekend. That would be fantastic. I love the farms in the Piedmont. I love the bay. I have a business, and I live at the oceanfront in Virginia Beach. I've taken my little 16-foot boat across the bay from Cape Henry through the Chalk over to Cape Charles and fished for striper out on those islands. I've camped with the ponies over there in Chincoteague for our neighbors on the eastern shore there. It's a great place, dude. And I just can't even imagine that we're even talking about doing this project. This is insane. I mean, I know that they've come in and there's all these ideas about how we're going to do this to make it safe and we're going to do that to make it safe. BS! It's not. Okay? There's erosion problems. This isn't a little DeWalt drill, and they talk about, I'm going to go over to a stream and drill and stuff this pipe through, and it's all going to be fine. Ain't going to happen. Okay, there's access roads to start with, heavy equipment, cranes, bulldozers. The beautiful pictures that the first speaker showed with the cypress forests, gone. Saw them off, bulldoze them, get the stumps out. Lay out something so we can get this heavy equipment down into those wet spots to get at these areas. That's my first problem. Now, I'm a land management professional. My wife and I we deal with smaller residential projects across the state. I've worked with the Department of Forestry. I've worked with the Natural Resources Conservation Service at the U.S. level, and I've worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service. I'm not just some green person that doesn't want, I'm not some tree-hugging anti-fossil fuel guy, okay? There's soil compaction that's going to happen with this equipment. What happens? Water can no longer penetrate the ground in those areas. What's going to happen? It's going to run off. Where's it going to run off? Into these naturally wet areas. This is the way they were created by the great creator, okay? It's going to end up in our waterways. It's going to take sediment pollution. It's going to end up there. It's going to get compacted, and you cannot fix compacted soil. Once you've taken a multi-ton piece of equipment across this land, it cannot, I don't care if you run a disc harrow through there, a rototiller, you name it, whatever Dominion has, you cannot fix compacted soil. It's going to take time, and it'll never be the same. That's the first part. Then all these crossings, and no one's talking about accessing them. What about the access points? What about all the extra trees that are coming down? Now, I've got a few facts here. Excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be so excited, but I am absolutely frustrated with this whole project. Now, trees, according to the U.S. Forest Service, here it is. A healthy 100-foot tall tree has about 200,000 leaves. A tree this size takes 11,000 gallons of water from the soil and releases it into the air again as water vapor. So you're talking 11,000 gallons of water per season per tree. How many trees are going to be taken down for the access roads and for the installation of this pipeline? Now, millions, right? Times 11,000 gallons per season that would be sucked up by these trees and sent off. Where is that water going to end up now that's not being consumed by these trees? Anybody? Anybody? It's going to end up in the waterways along with all the sediment and all the other crud and residential runoff and diesel fuel and hydraulic oil on leaking equipment. It's going to end up in our waterways. I love Virginia. I love our waterways. I love the resources here. It's a beautiful state. Aesthetically, this thing is a nightmare. We're talking about a permanent how many feet? 150 feet forever? And they're going to have to mow it and use pesticides, herbicides and things in this to maintain these rights of way? Do we really want to keep perpetually putting herbicides into waterways? This is insanity. Now, you guys have to base your decision on the public need. This is from your website on the, here it is. This goes from the Habitat Management Division webpage of the Marine Resources Council's Q&A. The question, what factors go into approval or denial of projects that impact state water bottoms? Answer, each application is evaluated to determine if it is in the public interest. This is accomplished by ensuring that projects are necessary and there are no reasonable alternatives requiring less environmental disruption, and that negative impacts do not unreasonably interfere with other private and public rights to the use of waterways and bottomlands. The evaluation of proposed shoreline projects requires a balanced considerations and often complex environmental economic factors. This project is not necessary. Okay? First of all, we've had plenty of industry experts come up and tell you about how many millions of miles or whatever it is, thousands of miles of pipelines that we already have in Virginia. This isn't just my opinion. We have economic reports. I assume that somebody sent these over to you. I tried to email them but had some issues with your email this week that say it's unneeded in Virginia. And on top of it, Dominion says this is not necessary. In the resource reports that they supplied to FERC back before the final EIS was issued and everything, in report number 10, section 10.6, alternatives, and I quote, system alternatives would make use of other existing modified or proposed pipeline systems to meet the same objectives as the ACP. Use of a system alternative would make it unnecessary to construct all or part of the ACP, though modifications or additions to existing or proposed systems could be required. Dominion's words. Yes, sir.
The audio and...
Is it too much?
You know, we hear you really very clearly. There's no reason to shout.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I apologize.
I admire your passion.
I am adamant about this. So that's their words. Dominion, unnecessary. Change a few things in the existing pipelines, and it's unnecessary. That's in your criteria for what you're to base your decision on is whether this is necessary. It's not. They've said it. They've said it. A bunch of people have said it. I don't know if you guys have any kind of conflict of economic interest in this. I hope not. I'm surely disappointed that you're not going to vote because working for the Chess Bay Foundation, I know that you must have some idea that how sensitive that estuary is. And all these headwaters that are up in the, they may not be under your purview, but eventually they will empty into the Chesapeake Bay. Everything up there comes down to probably the Shenandoah eventually, the Potomac, eventually the Bay. Okay? Your criteria have been met. This is unnecessary. It's not in the public interest. And I just don't know where else. I'm going to give you, I've written up some things here. Dominion has already had problems with environmental. I've got 16 cited and photographs. I don't need to stand here and go through each one of them with you. The trees are going to, you're going to take all these trees out, you're going to have runoff. You're going to have soil compaction, you're going to have runoff. It's a mess. It cannot be done safely.
Okay.
I'd like to submit this, please.
Thank you. We will keep that for the record.
I appreciate the time. Sorry to clear your drums.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Somebody else? Let me swear you in.
Okay.
Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth of God?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Kimberly Williams.
Welcome.
I am a 30-year resident of Norfolk, Virginia. I was born in Hampton. I've been a lifelong, save a couple of years here and there, resident of Virginia. I'm a great-granddaughter of a Chesapeake Bay waterman, And I know from family history, and I know from the cousins who tried and uncles who tried to continue in that that industry, that the Chesapeake Bay can't support that as an economy right now or anymore. And I know from this family history that waters that are unprotected can become dead, and that has always made me very sad. I appreciate your roles, as stated on your webpage, as stewards of the Commonwealth marine and aquatic resources and protectors of the tidal waters and homelands for present and future generations. I'm a social worker. I had to rearrange my schedule for some people who have a lot of difficulties in life to get here this morning, but I felt it was very important to come here. And I come here primarily as a mother, because I'll tell you what keeps me awake at night is my fear for the future. With all the dirty fossil fuel destruction of the environment. You've already heard plenty, and I'm no expert on sediment, but you've heard plenty, and I'm sure you've studied what disruptions of the dirts can do and the sediments can do to rivers and waterways. And I would say, if any single aspect of the web of life in these waterways is damaged by these kinds of disruptions, whether it's an important bug, an important amphibian, important fish, important bird, any of it that disappears will ultimately harm the rest of the web. I know enough science to know that. Living in Norfolk, where we're having increasing rising waters, I know that tidal streams and tidal wetlands play an important role in helping to protect us from flooding. So I ask you, as you make your decisions today, that not only do you take into consideration the disruptions and of the ways that the waterways will be directly threatened by the construction of this pipeline, I ask you to also take into consideration something that has not yet been mentioned this morning, which is what the contents of this proposed pipeline will be. This pipeline is going to carry dirty methane gas. The Earth cannot support more new pipelines carrying dirty methane gas. I don't care what Dominion's business plan is, or at power, or Duke Energy. The Earth cannot sustain it. My children's future are threatened by these pipelines, if they come online. Your children, your grandchildren, your nieces, your nephews, they're threatened. As a mother, I'm very dismayed to look out here and see that I don't see anyone who looks younger than 30 years old. Maybe that one gentleman from Richmond working for petroleum. But other than that, I think the rest of us look like we're over 30. I'm sorry if I'm hurting anybody's feelings, but their voices isn't represented here. My children's voices are not being heard here. So methane is a dirty fossil fuel that contributes to melting ice caps and the rising temperatures. Those contribute to the rising seas. Those facts now contribute to the huge storms that are becoming the new way of life. Storms like Harvey and Maria that just happened in the last year. Unprecedented amounts of water falling out of the sky in a very quick manner. You don't think those kind of storms are going to affect the waterways of Virginia? They're not going to contribute to landslides, even after everything gets restored, if Dominion does a good job of restoring what they mess up to put this pipeline in. You don't think that the landslides caused by the methane that's going to leak from every single seam in the pipelines, they leak. The methane that leaks terribly at the fracking site, that's not going to be affecting our waterways. It is, and I'm asking you to please consider that. The dirty methane gas will adversely affect Virginia's waters, and they will adversely affect the future of our children. So I'm asking you to please, please protect our resources. Please don't bow to Dominion Energy, who is a monopoly, who is more focused on the quarterly returns
their mission conflicts with your mission. If you are concerned about the future of this ecology being around for our children, for your children, so that they can fish, so that they can enjoy the beauties of natural Virginia, you have to stand up to them. Please, no one has stood up to them. No official body has stood up to them. But I implore you as a mother to please stand up to them. Tell them we don't need this dirty fossil fuel. You have to convert. You have to convert. Go ahead, bite the bullet, start converting to clean energy, Dominion. It'll be okay. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you God?
I do.
Please.
And brief.
Great. Please state your name for the record.
Victoria Vasher, and I'm the worst public speaker in the world. I get real nervous when all this energy's on. Anyway,
it's
important enough I have to say something. Yeah. I'm a landscape horticulturist, architect from Ohio State University. I want to implore you to think about our pollution problem. We have a CO2 problem. The way to get rid of CO2 is through photosynthesis. Where does photosynthesis come from? Trees. You tear down millions of carbon sequestering beautiful trees across the Appalachian Trail, through the George Washington National Forest, State Forest. You tear down those millions of trees. Not only, as my husband said, do you make the water problem worse, but you make the CO2 problem worse. Okay. If we put this pipeline in, it will lead to fracking. Fracking is absolutely insane. We're just killing the earth. You don't have to be a scientist, which I am, to know this. Let's see, what else? I think I've about said it. The one thing that I really want you to think about is this is not in the interest of the people nor the earth. It is for private profit for Dominion and their stockholders. And that's the truth. Please do the right thing and deny this.
Thank you. Do you hereby swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, as you God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Tess Amoruso, and I live in Norfolk, Virginia.
Welcome.
I'm going to start with reading something that actually I didn't write, but it was written by Trout Unlimited. Three gentlemen by the name of Kevin Daniels, Tom Benzing, and David Kinney, but it's just brief, so I'm going to read it because I think it's real important. Basically, Trout Unlimited conducted a GIS analysis of wild brook trout habitat that may be affected by the ACP, and the research highlighted that 33 stream crossings in Virginia involve streams with stronghold brook trout populations where fisheries are likely to survive a change in climate. Another 77 crossings would affect other important brook trout waters. In Highland County, just outside the boundaries of the George Washington National Forest, the pipeline would cross Jackson River and nearby perennial and intermittent tributaries 7 times over the course of 2 miles. And Bath and Augusta counties, where the project runs through a sliver of land between parcels of land held by the Forest Service, the route would cross Calfpasture River and its tributaries, among them Hamilton Branch, Tizzle Branch, Hodges Draft, Ramsey's Draft, 42 times over a span of 13 miles. Hodges Draft, Ramsey Draft, and the impact would be much the same further east in Augusta County, where the pipeline would cross Oribook Creek, Back Creek, and their tributaries 14 times. The Mountain Valley Pipeline, meanwhile, would cross 16 trout streams in Virginia, several of which are home to stronghold populations of brook trout, Stony Creek, Little Stony Creek, and Bottom Creek. Construction of these two pipelines could have significant impact on streams, wetlands, and fisheries they support in the area of the Appalachian that is home to robust, intact populations of brook trout. in-stream construction, clearing of vegetation, regrading soil compaction near these streams increase the potential for sediment from stormwater runoff, and this can reduce the levels of dissolved oxygen, smother trout spawning habitat with silt, and hamper fish egg development. Stream crossings can damage habitat, strip away protective buffers, destabilize stream banks, and alter stream beds. The letter goes on. I'm going to just stop it there. I think that's the point. So my point is I've only been a resident of Virginia since 2001, but I love this state. I've raised my daughters here, and I hope to stay, and I hope to be able to share the beauty of the streams and clean water with my daughters. Just a little quick aside, my father was actually a fisherman, and my mom died when I was a child. He raised myself and my brother. And some of our happiest memories, my own happiest memories of a child, is going fishing with my father. I know it sounds silly. I'm not even a fisherman myself. But I think the people that fish, it's more than just a recreation. I mean, it's almost like a sacred thing. I mean, it certainly was in our experience. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I feel like I'm speaking on behalf of the trout and the other, you know, the mussels and the other creatures, but they can't speak to themselves. I feel like we have a moral duty to speak to it. I also want to say that I'm a member of Mothers Out Front Hampton Road, but I'm basically primarily speaking here as a mother because I feel that we have a moral obligation to stop these pipelines. I can honestly say that over the past 4 years, I've been with the ongoing, continuous movement in our Commonwealth to stop these pipelines. We've been through many, many hearings at different agencies, at different levels. We've tried our best. I mean, we're just frustrated. I mean, a gentleman here that's like, you know, it's going off the charts. We're just frustrated. We don't know what else to do to be heard. I'm a resident in Norfolk, and, you know, I heard it mentioned earlier that Norfolk City Council approved going under our reservoirs. Well, you need to know that there was an intense, huge battle against that by the citizens in Norfolk. It was actually the third vote. The first two, there was a packed house. People were speaking to why we don't want, I mean, I don't feel like I have to be an environmental engineer to understand why it's not a good idea to put a 42-inch fracked gas pipeline under our drinking water reservoirs. And we had a packed house. We had numerous people come and talk. We wrote letters. We met with our council people. And in the end, it was a one vote margin on a revised agenda that was split. It was basically slipped in at the last minute. That's what happened this week on Tuesday. That's just a fact that you can go to the public record and see that. So I just want you to know that that vote does not mean that the people of Norfolk were for this in any way. And it's pertinent because it's one of the areas that potentially, that, you know, you're deciding on that could potentially be impacted. I tried to take notes, so I'll try to get back to my notes. Basically, I feel as a mother, a lot of the groups I represent, including Mothers Out Front, feel that we do not have the right to make these impacts on our streams and waters. They do not belong to us. I'm in my 50s. I have two adult daughters in their 20s. Do you want to know why my daughters aren't here today? Let's see if you guys can guess. Because they're working. They have to work. So it's incumbent on us, the people that can be here, to try to make this appeal, to understand. They care. My daughters understand this issue. We just don't know what else to do. We've done everything legally, peacefully, within our powers. At some point, the system just has to start working for people. At some point, there has to be something beyond corporate interest, beyond greed. I'm jumping ahead in my notes, but I really want to get to an important point because it's also relevant for why you should deny this permit today, okay? You're stewards of our aquatic resources. The criteria has not been met to allow this project. The project is not necessary. It's been proven, you know, the industry spokespeople said earlier about how many existing gas pipelines exist. This has been studied many times. It's been proven that we have enough capacity now with those existing pipelines. There's a man by the name of Tom Harding who's been he's a former industry executive. He's done a lot of work on this. This is just This is information that's out there. These are not our opinions as tree huggers. This is actual information that's out there that we don't need these pipelines. And another thing, they're not going to serve the state or Commonwealth. You know, we had a question earlier, where is this gas going? It's not going to stay in Virginia. The vast majority is going to go out of the country because of the fact that there's a lot of money to be made in it. As a matter of fact, they're saying that it's needed in Southampton Roads. There's a distribution line called the Southside Connector Distribution Line that's part of VNG, okay? And that line is fiercely contested by the residents of Norfolk and Chesapeake where it's going to impact. They already have a smaller pipeline that's serving their needs. There's communities such as the people right there at the Elizabeth River, the family that owns that river that's fighting them in courts right now. So the point is that we don't need this gas. It's not needed. The point about the Southside Connector is a lot of us understand that that was basically just put in there as something to make the argument that a lot of it is needed in this region and it's going to support our state. But it's actually not needed. It's just not true. I mean, people come up, we're asked to swear, and then we lie. I mean, I guess the bottom line I'm saying is the people in this room that made those testimonies, it's just not true, factually.
Let me ask a question here. The commission's jurisdiction is the water bottom crossings and the tidal wetland crossings. Do you have anything left to say that specifically addresses those issues in your mind?
Well, I actually think I do, which is that I think that there's a broader issue here, which is that it's what my colleague said earlier about there's a web of life that's at stake. So that whatever happens in the water bodies and whatever happens to those fragile habitats that we've been discussing are not like the bald cypress forest wetlands and the endangered species. They don't exist in a vacuum. They exist in a broader biosphere. That's the biosphere that we all depend on. I mean, nature just doesn't work that way. So the decisions that are going to be made, not just going to impact that biosphere and that habitat, but it's going to impact our entire Commonwealth. So I think I understand the question, but I think it's really important that the dots are connected. Just a very short, this is just a few sentences. Bill McKenna wrote earlier in the week that here's the trouble with looking at frack gas as an alternative to coal and as an alternative to carbon dioxide emitting greenhouse gases. Present in smaller, far more dangerous and potent is CH4, otherwise known as methane, the primary component of natural gas. If you burn natural gas, you get less carbon dioxide with coal, but any methane that escapes unburned into the atmosphere on the way to power plant warms the planet very effectively, so effectively that if you leak more than 2 or 3%, it's worse for climate change than coal. The reason climate change is so important is that we live in an area right now. People in Norfolk are infected with climate change today, not in some future, not in decades to come. I mean, we actually plan our routes and stuff around the tides and around the rains. So to me, I understand the question, sir, but it's completely interrelated. At what point do we say we must get off of fossil fuels and we must get onto clean, green, renewable energies? It has to start somewhere. And it's been, as I said, a long, drawn-out fight for 4 years in this Commonwealth going to the agencies that are representing us and the agencies that are mandated with protecting us and protecting our biosphere. And at some point, there has to be responsiveness. And I would hope that that point is actually here and now. I mean, I feel like, as I said, I'm in my 50s. I've made my decisions about my life and where I want to live and what I want to do. But I feel a moral obligation to my children and other children to do the right thing, to be here standing with them for them because they can't be here, and to try to impress on this particular board how important it is to make the right decision today. I mean, just the bottom line, I guess my points are to what the first speaker again said today, that the decision does not have to be made today. The right decision is to delay or deny the permit, and even under your own, I guess, bylaws, it shouldn't be made today. You are the stewards of our aquatic resources. This is arguably one of the most important decisions you're going to make in that capacity. It needs to be shown that this project is in the public public interest. It clearly is not in the public interest. It's not necessary. That's what I was trying to say earlier about what we know about, that we really don't need this gas. And the impacts just across the board, we've said earlier, you cannot fix compacted soil. It will never be the same. There's things that we don't get to make a mistake on. We don't get to take back. So I'm just here speaking as a mother, as a resident of the Commonwealth, as somebody who really loves this environment and actually is a fan of mussels and oysters and the resources that it's your duty to protect, to ask you to please make the right decision today and delay or deny the permit. I thank you for your time.
Great.
And I thank you for listening to all that.
Thank you very much. Counselor,
yes.
I don't need to swear you in because you're a counselor.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
My name, Mr. Commissioner, members of the commission, is Peggy Sander. I'm here as Assistant Director and Attorney for Chesapeake Bay Foundation, an organization that many of you know has spent the last 50 years working to restore the Chesapeake Bay. We're just beginning to see progress. I have some written comments I'd like to hand around.
Jamie, keep one for yourself for the record.
So I'm speaking today basically to make three points. The first is to underscore the importance and relevance of the public trust doctrine to the requested permit issuance. I'd also like to identify certain steps pursuant to that public trust responsibility and doctrine that I believe should be taken today to protect critical resources. And finally, I'd like to urge the Commission to delay issuance of the permit to take account of and provide an opportunity for a broader consideration of some important information that may not have been fully digested, and also to balance in a more thorough way some of the competing public uses that we have heard about today. You all know the public trust. You know that this venerable and rightly venerated doctrine, which grows out of hoary common law from hundreds of years ago, which is now embodied in the Virginia Constitution and reflected in the Virginia Code's charge to you all to protect and safeguard the public trust, to use and enjoy the subaqueous land of the Commonwealth, which is held in trust by it, by you, for the benefit of the people. It's a pretty remarkable statement. It characterizes the Virginia Constitution in a fairly unusual and important way. And I don't need to tell you that it distinguishes this body from, to my knowledge, every other body, board, commission in the state, even others which are also tasked with protecting the environmental resources. I know you take it seriously. I've seen lots of evidence of that, but I would ask you, first of all, to keep that in mind as you consider all the comments you've heard today on both sides of the room and as you proceed to make a decision. It requires you, I would say, to consider very carefully the balancing of other reasonable and permissible uses by the public, not just the uses that are contemplated by the permittee seeking the requested subaqueous permit. It requires, of course, consideration of marine and fisheries resources, of tidal wetlands, of the adjacent properties, and resident biota like subaquatic vegetation. The force and, in my view, VMRC's responsibility under this doctrine is not abrogated by the permittee's federal FERC permit or any other government approval or permit that you may have heard about today or otherwise be aware of. This is your responsibility, and it will remain your responsibility. In our view, it means that you all must consider and protect tidal wetlands, of course. You all know from today's proceedings and other proceedings how critical these resources are to the health of our waterways, to the water quality in our tidal tributaries and in the Chesapeake Bay. What wetlands are important to habitat, to the life of all the critters on which we depend. They are critical and of increasing importance when we consider the need for shoreline stabilization.
Mitigation, of course, is a possibility. Mitigation is reflected in some of the papers that the permittee has submitted. It is acknowledged in the thorough comments and recommendations made by agency staff and of other sister agencies. But I would say that we have, and I've referenced in the materials, studies that indicate that mitigation, often through credits, which are certainly an important part of Virginia's tools to protect wetlands, are not always sufficient, in fact, to ensure the health of wetlands going forward. That's why the priority, which is established both in federal and Virginia law, is first avoid, then minimize impacts to wetlands, and then only mitigate afterward. So the question is, has appropriate avoidance been considered and implemented? Has appropriate steps to minimize also been considered and implemented before we get to the question of whether or not there will be adequate mitigation? I would also note there was a reference this morning to the fact that you all are sitting here today in the place of the Chesapeake City's Wetlands Board. In that role, I think you know your responsibility is to, yes, allow for appropriate development insofar as it is consistent with wetlands preservation. You don't give up the responsibility to preserve wetlands in connection with the approval of this subaqueous permit or otherwise discharging your wetlands board responsibilities. So I think I would ask you to remember that and consider whether or not in reviewing the record that work has been done adequately. Your public trust responsibilities, I would say, also require consideration and protection of water quality as distinct from wetlands, especially in the case of such a large-scale construction operation vis-a-vis the sedimentation that we know will occur at each of these 51 contemplated crossings. Now, there's been some reference, of course, to the large-scale nature of the project. There's been some reference to the work that has been done in connection with the DEQ permitting process, the State Water Control Board certification, and there was a reference, perhaps you heard it, to the idea, which I would affirm to you is true, that permit that DEQ has issued, 401 certification, addresses water quality concerns, but it does not come into effect unless and until DEQ reviews, considers, and ultimately approves the very detailed site-by-site steps to be taken to control erosion and sediment and also to control post-construction runoff. That has not happened yet. It's been long promised. It's we don't know what the result will be. That permitting area addresses specifically uplands impacts, but the sedimentation arising from any uncontrolled or insufficiently controlled sedimentation will ultimately go to our waterways, our tributary streams from the headwaters all the way to the bay, and will be added to sediment arising from, if insufficiently protected, these stream crossings. Now, in all aspects of the work related to the permitting of this pipeline that I have seen, we see the repeated reference to, yes, construction, yes, land disturbance, but of course we will mitigate, of course we will protect, so the only thing that will be left will be transitory sedimentation. Not particularly well-defined term, to my knowledge, not quantified in any way that's meaningful. You have seen that in the materials today. What are transitory impacts, and can we just dismiss them? I think that the answer is, at least for my part, they should not be dismissed. And so I believe and would urge you to require as a condition to and as a condition preceding the issuance of any permit, appropriate data that includes relevant and careful modeling to actually describe and quantify the duration and impact and amounts of the sedimentation that will hit our tributary streams and ultimately the bay relating to this construction. With respect to other specific recommendations, of course, I concur with what I heard this morning coming from sister agencies to the commission. Any condition for a permit that you may ultimately decide to issue must require complete adherence to all of the relevant erosion sediment control rules, stormwater management requirements, and must do so, I would urge, strongly without any exemption or waiver or request for leniency. The rules should be adhered to completely. I also think it would be critical to establish as a condition of any permit that you may decide to issue monitoring both before and after, upstream and downstream, of each of these 51 stream crossings to ensure that there is knowledge about the actual impacts that may occur as a result of this construction. I would urge also to the Commission that the public trust doctrine requires that the Commission carefully consider and protect each of the listed species and habitats that will be impacted. This is a set of studies you have heard earlier from your sister agencies, very detailed. There's a very complex set of requirements that should be followed. I would urge you as a condition of any permit that you may decide to issue. And again, I would emphasize these recommendations, to the extent they are intended to be protective of these species, should be adhered to without waiver, without exemption, and without leniency. Finally, just coming back to the public use concept, the public trust doctrine requires that you all carefully consider and balance competing permissible uses. You've heard much this morning. You've seen in the record significant testimony about competing uses of these waterways, and I would submit fairly powerful testimony about conflicts that have not yet been resolved in a way that I think is consistent with the balancing responsibilities that this commission has. So in view of the need to balance those public interests with this requested use of the bottomlands, in view of outstanding information, some of which I've alluded to today, I would urge you all to take additional time to review these materials and reach a decision that is consistent with your responsibilities under the public trust. Thank you very much. We very much appreciate your work on this project and in all of the areas of your activities. Thank you.
Thank you. Please come forward, sir.
A few handouts that
sounds great.
I'd like to distribute. Something to look at, says me.
I'm going to swear you in. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God?
Yes, sir,
please
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm William Porter, and I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Welcome.
And I spend a lot of time in Bath, Highland, Augusta, and Nelson County, so I'm pretty familiar with those particular areas. My background is a mechanical engineer. Spent since 1982 designing quite a few pressure pipes. 95% of my work's involved pressure pipes over the years, and I have an appreciation for the energy trade. My dad worked his entire career for Mobil Oil, and there's a lot of pipe discussion when I was growing up and on into my later years. So I have some familiarity with the piping concept. Rather than looking at the entire picture, I'm still working, and all I could do was just drill down into one particular section of the pipe that I'm familiar with. So I picked one that I thought was technically interesting to me and had a lot of challenges with it. And what I'm showing you here on the first picture is the what's labeled SNEA-021, which is a water body crossing just below the Blue Ridge Parkway drill site. And you can see here the trees have been cleared. And this was taken earlier this week right before snow. And you can see along the edges that All the trees were just taken down within the last week and a half. There's a little bit of erosion that's starting to occur where the white stripes are. And the FERC permit initially required leaving trees within 50 feet of the water body, but they appealed for this and got all the trees taken down, so there's a direct path going into the Rockfish River, southward the Rockfish River here on the first page. This reflects only about a third of the clear cut that's going up the side of the mountain. They haven't completed it yet, and it goes up about 300 feet in this picture. The actual clear cut goes up about 800 feet and over about 2,150 feet of length, so it's a pretty steep incline. Next one's looking in the other direction, same creek crossing, and you can see the road up there at the top, Beech Grove Road, and just for reference, I've seen water up in excess of the height where the stumps are cut right there, so it's highly variable and a pretty high velocity stream. Any kind of sediment you have that's picked up from either side is going to go downstream in a hurry. This particular crossing, like many others, is limited as the time of year that they can cut in. Their 6 months are outlawed, that the permit does not allow them to work in. So the actual construction of the crossing has to occur sometime between April and September, which is significant because of the next picture is the history of Nelson County. Nelson County is situated such that it picks up summer storms coming up from the Gulf and coming up from the south, and they get trapped against the mountains on the east side there. And as a result, they've had some tremendous rainstorms. This particular one I'm referencing, August 69, 130 people were killed. You can see the rock and the mud flows coming down the side of the mountain. And clearly there's a little bit of sedimentation involved. Again, the significance of this may require slightly deeper pipe cuts underneath the river body crossings. And there's potential also for these being undermined as erosion takes place. Next picture, same deal, Rockfish River, 1969. And you can see another channel that was actually cut by this event. So you've got some very, very significant velocity of water flowing through the mountains here in Nelson County. In reviewing the documentation so far, the next slide's pretty self-explanatory. That's earthquake epicenters, and the project goes right between the two, and the James River crossing appears to be pretty close right to the Central Virginia seismic zone. I've been unable to find any information on how they're planning to deal with that. Next one we're into here is Blue Ridge Parkway drill rig site. This is the part that concerns me probably more than anything. This is surrounded. The drill rig site, it goes underneath the Blue Ridge Parkway, 9/10 of a mile for a 42-inch pipe, and it's surrounded on two sides by tributaries that feed into the Rockfish River. So one of them, the actual tributary, shows it going right to the where the drill rig is going to be, right within feet of it. The other one's within about 50 feet. So if there is one of these frack outs or any kind of a blowout, even though this isn't a creek crossing per se, you have a lot of potential for any sort of frack out of the bentonite and any sort of polymer additives they've got of flowing down into the downstream area at a tremendous velocity. And unlike when you're doing the work in a bottom, the frack out material is more likely to go downstream in a hurry here as opposed to just spreading out on the ground if you're down in a valley when you're normally working on that sort of situation. The creek crossing we were looking at earlier is about 250 feet downstream from this, and those two creeks I'm talking about feed down into the same Rockfish River. Final one is last year. Just shows you what a frack out looks like. This was a drill and bore site, and this was about 2 million gallons worth of spill and they're talking about importing about 6 million gallons into this project for water from the James River to go into the drilling lubrication of the bit and so forth. So anyway, Gas Research Institute did a study not long ago on 54 directional drilling projects, some of the larger ones, and they found that almost half of these things had some sort of frack out associated with them. And if you're up high, like Blue Ridge Parkway is, potential of this getting picked up into the downstream water and carried down, I think, is pretty high. So, like I said, I only focused on this one area, just one guy, as opposed to a team of people working for the other folks, but I had enough things associated with this to cause me extreme concern. This was my professional engineering seal. I wouldn't put it on this project. The potential for problems coming up is just too great for me to risk my career. So I'm asking you to ask for more information, possible rerouting of some places, because a lot of this stuff is engineering, from an engineering perspective, perfectly feasible. But going up 800 feet is tough. Picking up a bore site, 42 inches, going 9/10 of a mile, 6 million gallons pouring down into the mountain, that water's going to come out somewhere. And I don't know if it's going to come out drinking water, if it's going to come out create new streams, but something's going to happen. It's going to pick up some sediment, and it's going to ultimately impact the fish. So with that, I just ask you to consider denying or delaying, asking for more information.
You stand for a couple questions.
Sure.
Mrs. Everett.
So the first and second picture are Dominion work for access to ACP?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, FERC allowed access to sites under eminent domain. The owner in that particular case had not given permission to do the work yet, but FERC allowed them to come in and do the work. And it happened within the last 10 days or so.
Mrs. Everett.
These pictures are taken last 10 days?
Yeah. The snow picture was taken, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and then the other one was taken a day or two before that.
Commissioner Bull, I'd love to ask our staff, Randy, potentially, questions about this, if that's okay. I don't know if you've seen these pictures.
Let them see the pictures.
Okay.
Let's finish the public testimony, and then you'll have plenty of opportunity to ask staff.
Okay.
Anything that comes to mind. Any other questions of the witness? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify in opposition to this project? Welcome. Let me swear you in. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
Absolutely.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Vera Silver, S-I-L-V-E-R. I'm from Newport News. I've served on the Wetlands Board, among lots of other things. Now, I realize you're tired. This has been rather long. I ask you to maybe lift your shoulders and take a deep breath. I won't make this long. I want to talk to you about the big picture. You are to decide on something that's relatively small, but we need to look at the part of the big picture. And I am bent out of shape because people have not talked about the pollution of methane gas, methane, from fracking and from getting coal and putting all this gas in the air. The problem with methane is that it heats the atmosphere 18 times faster than carbon dioxide. 18 times faster. And it does not affect the same part of the light spectrum. Now, the good thing is that if you decrease your methane, you cool the atmosphere 18 times faster than carbon dioxide cools it. But I need you to understand that and to look at the big picture, because people haven't been talking about it, and as I said, I've been out of shape. It heats the ocean water. It makes it more acidic. We need to understand this, and I love trees, so I have a problem with cutting down the trees and putting, you know, other junk into the air with the sediment, so I agree with the people who have spoken earlier. But I want you to consider the problems of methane gas, okay? Make this short. Oh, and Maya Angelou mentioned something a long time ago. She asked people to look out and look up. I'm asking you to do the same things because we need to plan for our children and their children and to leave something good on this earth. We need to make sensible decisions and to investigate, to look at the big picture. And don't forget about that awful methane gas. People have it coming up into their drinking waters, through their pipes, in their kitchens when they turn their water on. It is no joke. Thank you.
Thank you. And ma'am, thank you very much for your service on the Wetlands Board. They are critical to the work we do. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify in opposition to this project? Is there anybody else who wishes to testify either for or against? Is there anybody in the audience that has anything else left to say that you really want the board to hear?
One quick, this one.
Okay, in which case, okay, but come forward.
I will stand back away from the microphone.
State your name again.
Christopher Vacher, V is Victor, A-C-H-E-R.
Yes.
Just one more thing we talked about. They're looking to blast through. People brought up the brook trout situation. Everybody in the board, I'm sure, is aware of what the state fish is, right? That's all I had to say. Thanks.
Okay, so this is last call for anybody from the public who wishes to have their voice heard by the board. Because if there's nobody else, I'm going to close the public hearing, and then it'll be before the board for discussion and action, and there's going to be no more further public testimony. So it's last call.
I just have my address and phone number because I really was serious. Whatever, I hope
okay, terrific. We'll take your address and your phone number here for the record here, and we'll keep it as part of the record. And thanks again for the invitation. Is there anybody else who wishes to be heard? Last call. Public hearing is now closed, and the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. And I believe we'll start with a question that Mrs. Everett has for the staff. Mr. Owen.
All right, we have a series of photographs here. The first two are related to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. The balance are historical photographs. In the first picture, it is the slope of a mountain, which you have no authority and jurisdiction over, but it is showing a clear-cut path for the right-of-way. The second picture I have seen, we got two emails from Mr. Porter. In the first one, and it shows a tree felled across a stream that I can step across, okay? So I'm going to tell you why that's a non-jurisdictional stream in a minute, but the picture was sent because in the original email sent about a week and a half ago, Mr. Porter said, I don't believe they have the permission to be within the right-of-way, within 50 feet of the trees. He sent a second email quickly thereafter saying, okay, I was wrong, FERC did get permission to be there. I just pulled up table B, B as in boy, 2 of the of both the final environmental impact statement and our application. It is entitled Water Bodies Crossed by ACP. There are 6 crossings of the Rockfish River. 5 of them, let me rephrase that, there are 1 crossing of the Rockfish River. There are 5 crossings of unnamed tributaries of the Rockfish River. The drainage area for the Rockfish River crossing is over 19 square miles. I can assure you I may not step over that. So the photograph that shows the tree across the stream is in an unnamed tributary that we have no authority and jurisdiction over. Those are my comments.
Mrs. Everett.
Thank you. I appreciate that explanation. I guess my question is, maybe help me understand a little bit, for those crossings that are jurisdiction, in terms of our jurisdiction of protecting the subaqueous habitat or species, how is there assurance that that same type of situation might not
happened in those other circumstances, and with sedimentation, erosion, that, again, of course, there's an edge of bank delineation. Everyone, there's certain agencies have a jurisdiction, won't be affecting. What kind of measures can we ask to be in place or monitoring and compliance, enforcement, that promises that that sediment that we obviously see in this case wouldn't end up in another case?
The limits of this commission's jurisdiction are in-stream measures only. We have no authority to regulate the BMPs that are outside the limits of ordinary water in the non-tidal waters or within the sub-aqueous areas for tidal waters. So the 12 conditions that are in this permit, again, as with the previous hearing we had in January, are not only our standard in-stream conditions that we impose for all utility crossings in Virginia, but we took the additional comments from BEMS, DCR, and DGIF as they recommended them to be in our conditions. And they're everything from notification for blasting, notification for working trout waters, notification for the requirements for and time of year restrictions for spawning periods. They're all in there. But admittedly, if they, in picture number one, if they cut the side of a mountain down and to put a right-of-way and sediment comes down that hill, that is more in the purview of the State Water Control Board's 401 certificate. If it enters the stream, we do have the authority to work with all of the agencies, including FERC, to mitigate for that damage, to have the sediment removed in the most efficient manner possible. It would be a multi-jurisdictional, multi-agency approach. I think that's the best response I can provide on the record.
Yes, it's an effort.
So when you, looking at that picture, when you say if it enters a stream, what kind of mechanisms are in place to determine if it has entered the stream and then therefore there's a multi-agency approach?
My understanding, and I may have to yield to the applicant, that there are, that the Department of Environmental Quality has hired two people within their agency to be on the pipeline until it is, if it is approved and constructed, so you'll have DEQ inspectors on the scene. There are third-party independent inspectors that are required by FERC to be out there, as well as I do believe that Dominion will have their own inspectors. So there is a, the level of detail that this gets to is Dominion asked me about Condition 1. If you look at Condition 1, it is, it talks about the open cut crossings of streams and our requirements for coffer dams. They made it very clear to me that the wording in the language was of concern to them because of the 50% width of the coffer dam that can be installed. We added the word approximately because they made a good point. You can't go 50% and then make the pipe weld. You've got to go more than 50% to get the coffer dam in place. So, and their report, their comment to me directly was, and this was 2 days ago, I believe, our third-party inspectors will question that inability to meet that condition. So I can only say that it is my opinion that the inspectors that are being brought to bear on this are will report to us, and we'll react to any and all jurisdictional matters that come to our attention.
This is Everett.
So, but in this case, the reason you didn't get that report, and it was, you might have missed a reporter, was because it's not a jurisdictional stream. But
well,
I guess my question is about the process in terms of enforcement and how that actually, we expect that to play out.
What report are we referring to, sir? I don't know.
Well, I guess when you describe that process, of a report would be, you know, alerted to you, given those inspectors that are in place.
Yes.
In this case, it didn't happen because it wasn't under VMRC jurisdiction, but is there confidence on behalf of staff that that would happen if it was a jurisdictional water body?
It's a massive project. It isn't underway. We don't haven't given them approval to be in our areas yet. So all I can tell you is for the work that the gentleman that submitted this report advised us that he did learn, in fact, that they had permission to be there. Even the fact that the tree is laying across the stream is not a violation. it has to be removed within a certain time frame under the FERC. And I'm speaking on a matter that's outside of my jurisdiction. This is a non-tidal stream, but I looked into it. So they had X hours to remove this tree from laying across the stream. And so the first time, all I can say is that a citizen turned it in. We looked at it. We looked at our jurisdiction. I am sure there will be things that happen that we won't hear about. But I can't answer that question. I don't know how to give you a certainty that we're going to hear about them all. No, ma'am.
Mr. Tanker.
Mr. Owen, I've got a question for you with regard to the 48-hour blasting recommendation we have in your summary here, and why you went with 48 as opposed to, so we heard some testimony here today about a 1 week period of time would be perhaps better for notification.
Yes, sir. That comes from our SABECA's guidelines, with the emphasis being on guidelines. So if the 48 hours is what the Game Department has told us that they're satisfied as a time frame, but if you would feel more comfortable making it a week or 2 weeks, I am sure that that's within your purview. You can change that to anything you want. But that comes from our guidelines, which guide us in our decisions. But we've been working with that 48 hours. I've been employed by this agency for 29 and a half years, and that number has not changed in the time I've been here.
Follow-up question. In that time, have you seen any problems associated with the 48-hour?
No, sir. I was assigned, as the commissioner knows, we are assigned to both title and non-title counties. For most of my tenure here, I've had Southwest Virginia, and it's the eight westernmost counties, Lee, Russell, Dickinson, Wise, Buchanan, and I have not had, in my experience, a problem with that.
Additional questions to the commission? Mr. Bell.
We've discussed the wet open cut sites at length. I want your opinion on whether you think, well, we've heard testimony that there are pros and cons to the HDD method, and there are pros and cons to the open cut method. In these specific wet cut areas, what is your opinion for the best method to use looking at a jurisdictional impact?
Well, to be fair, when we left the meeting at DEQ, it was over a two-hour meeting with the agency that I mentioned on the record in attendance. It was the consensus of the group that we would accept that condition.
Yeah, I think if VIMS has some comments on it, it might be interesting.
It might be helpful to have VIMS comments on everything they've heard so far. And Mr. Varnell, if you would. You've already been sworn in, sir.
Yes. Paul Varnell, VIMS. That's a broad opening for me that you gave.
Intentionally.
I'll have to turn that back, tone that down a little bit because of the scope of what we were asked to comment on. We were not requested to look at those situations, Mr. Ballard, so I really can't address those. Even though I have done research and published on swamps in Virginia, I do know even from a research perspective, they're hard to get into and work in. But other than that, I think we should defer from commenting on that for the record. So.
Any other questions to VIMS?
Yes.
Mr. France.
Yes, sir. My question would be, how would this in-stream blasting affect these very sensitive aquatic animals in these areas?
Are you referring to the tidal areas that are not a part of the application? Because we did not review anything beyond the tidal. We were not requested to do that. We were requested to review a very, very limited element of this project.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, who could answer those questions, like on these areas that we're talking about, that we have jurisdiction where they're going under streams and may blast and could have effect on these animals, fish or mussels or whatever?
This is not a unique situation in my 30-plus year tenure at this, and I do know, based on my experience, there are some very good people in academia and at the agencies in Virginia that have looked at this and many times. So you know, there's names that I could give you, but I'm, you know, it would probably be specific to the area that you had had questions about. But mm-hmm. game inland fisheries, Vince has full faith in their views and their review capabilities of these projects.
Any other questions? Ms. Everett.
I guess just from Vince's point of view, were all of your concerns in the limited jurisdiction that you reviewed, or the limited scope that you reviewed, met, or do you still have existing concerns?
We feel that the conditions that were placed by the staff in front of you for deliberation do address everything that we had concerns about.
Yeah. Mr. Peck? So I just have a follow-up question, Mr. Verneau. So the HDD method, you wouldn't think that you're comfortable with not using that in the couple stream crossings and the marsh/swamp crossings?
Well, from a VIMS perspective, I wouldn't embrace the term comfortable from our perspective. What I will offer to you is when we look at an area that we're asked to look at from an environmental perspective, look at what is the avoidance. As you have heard, there's a sequencing, and we do that too. The avoidance, the minimization, and then we don't look at compensation unless asked for review. But, of course, avoidance would be the HDD method, and that truly would avoid all impacts in our area of expertise that we see. The minimization, the trenching, placing, and restoration has occurred many times in Virginia. We have reviewed those. We have gone back and looked at those as VIMS. That can be very successful. It depends, of course, on getting the elevations correct in a wetland, the plantings, the seeding, and the monitoring for that. If that can be done very well, it is temporary in impact. It can restore. It may not even take that long. It depends on the specific situation. But I guess I can expound a little bit on some earlier. From the Phragmites perspective, we've heard about that and what we had recommended for some more native species there. If you directional drill, you maintain that Phragmites community as it is. With what we have recommended, given that if it is indeed allowed to trench and restore, you at least have the opportunity to introduce and hopefully get some native species back instead of the frag. But Mr. Owen is exactly correct. That, you know, our view is too that that's a very very aggressive species that takes no prisoners most of the time. So we can expect that, hopefully, but some of the native species, especially at the lower elevations, could maybe take on that if that is done from that perspective.
Any additional questions from the commission?
I just had one more, maybe for the audience. You mentioned earlier that you've seen a number of these crossings of this type in your career. Can you give us any sense of the scope of the number of crossings you've seen in your career? I mean, is this something that's not that unusual what we're dealing with here today?
Personally, I can give you a few dozen. From a VIMS perspective, where others were also involved, especially from Virginia Department of Transportation, there's been, I can't give you, it probably gets up into the close to the triple figures over the years. This was a huge issue of concern back in the 80s when it was in front of the Corps of Engineers. A very long story with all of this, but there was this is when the sequencing came about, especially with tidal wetlands and restoration and creation and such. And we gave it a very special look at VIMS, and we made sure and we were requested to be involved in a lot of the early work on this in Virginia. So we have had extensive experience in this, mostly in the coastal plain, not very much in the Piedmont or mountain regions. However,
at least in our area that we have worked, we've seen that there have been failures. But from those failures, we have learned. And those failures have been reduced over time to much more favorable outcomes in much quicker times, much quicker time windows.
Thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Furnuff. Well, let me ask the board here. Do you want to take a break for lunch, or do you want to plow ahead? Anyone want a break for lunch? Or?
I'm okay plowing, but...
Well, let's plow ahead then. All right, well, the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. If there's other people you want to hear from, let's hear from them. Mr. Neal.
I want to hear from you. Randy actually answered part of this, and basically it's what is our jurisdiction? You know, we're hearing about global warming and upland trees and soil impaction and that kind of thing. And my understanding is in the coastal region we may have a little bit more latitude. In the non-coastal region, our jurisdiction is fairly limited, and I've heard something about federal preeminence and something. What is our jurisdiction?
So it is your responsibility to consider the factors that are contained in 28.2.1205 and 28.2.1302, which govern submerged bottom land and tidal wetlands. This permit is for impacts to submerged bottom lands and tidal wetlands. And under 28.2.101, which delineates the jurisdiction of the commission, your jurisdiction is submerged bottom lands. And I think it's somewhere in the 1300s that gives you jurisdiction over tidal wetlands.
So soil impaction, upland trees are outside of our... Randy was correct in that.
If you are trying to seek permit conditions on this permit that would reach things like cutting upland trees, I think that would be difficult to justify.
Any other questions? Any other comments from the commission? Let me ask a broad-based question here. What does the commission want to do? You've heard the testimony here. You've heard the staff recommendation. You've heard what's gone into the staff recommendation. This is a matter for the commission to decide. Mr. Packard.
I guess one thing we should make sure before we move forward is the different conditions to the permit. Does the applicant, would they be in agreement with these conditions?
Well, let's have the applicant come forward here. Somebody from ACP willing to come up here and answer a couple questions? Please remind us of your name.
Richard Gangle.
Thank you, Mr. Tankard. So the 12 permit conditions, I believe Mr. Tankard's question is that something that the applicant agrees to?
Yes, we would be willing to accept those conditions.
Further questions?
No, I don't have any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Neal, you look like you have something on your mind.
Again, I'm not an attorney, but it was also my understanding that we have we can impose reasonable conditions. She doesn't want to talk today.
Yes, you can impose reasonable conditions.
But as part of the DEQ, you're almost an attorney. You've been around them enough. Part of the DEQ permitting process, we cannot tell them no.
I don't know that that's the case. And if it was, it wouldn't be because of the DEQ permit.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Neal, you seem to be looking to me for guidance here.
Yeah,
so,
you were at the January, was the last meeting January? The January meeting.
With the Mountain Valley Pipeline.
Yes, and there was a statement limiting our authority in upland regions. And it was something about federal preeminence and something that limited our scope of what we could do.
Mr. Neal, I think the best thing I can tell you is FERC has stated that we can't unreasonably delay construction or operation of the
Thank
facility.
That was the language I was
However,
okay.
This pipeline is not the same
Correct.
As that pipeline that we considered. So the best thing to do is make a determination under your statutory authority about what to do with this permit.
Thank you. That actually cleared up what my questions were. Thank you.
Mr. Packer.
You know, when you look at the application beforehand, it seemed to me somewhat reasonable to demand that we be the most cautious that we could be in the using the HDD directional drill method for crossing. Seemed to me probably the one of the wiser things to do. But having her testimony, I'm not sure about that, and I want to see what others on the commission thought. I agree with the permit conditions by and large, but the only thing that I have concern about is whether or not it is really actually safer in the areas to use HDD as opposed to the open directional open cut method. Excuse me.
Mr. Bell,
I had the same concerns and was trying to answer that question and decipher it, and ultimately came to a very similar conclusion that each method has pros and cons, and I think that's part of the question we're facing on this in general. But ultimately came to the same conclusion that while HDD appears, the avoidance strategy appears to be best at first glance, that each situation is unique and that this has been pretty thoroughly vetted, and where wet
right.
cuts and open cuts are recommended, that seems to be the appropriate measure.
Yeah. I guess one other semi-legal question that was brought up. We are comfortable that we have properly noticed, and this is actually an official VMRC meeting with full quorum and all that kind of thing.
I think that's true, yes.
Okay. I thought so, but I'm not an attorney.
Mr. Bauer.
If there's no more discussion, I guess I'll summarize that I'm not a huge fan of this project, a saltwater boy, but learned to fly fish and went to school in a lot of these areas. And hate to see any impact to these areas. But I think this project has been analyzed very sufficiently and has what I would call above normal exceptions, well, above normal conditions for the permit, and that I move to approve staff recommendation with all of the permit conditions as outlined.
That's a motion made by Mr. Ballard here to approve for the staff recommendation with the 12 permit conditions that were delineated. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Neal. Is there a discussion? Well, before anybody else jumps in for some discussion, I want to thank Mr. Owen for what has been some heroic work on the part of the staff here. This has been a very complicated case. This has had a lot of moving parts. This has required interdisciplinary meetings here between various agencies, all sorts of submissions and submittals, and a lot of very technical analysis that's gone into getting us here today. So I want to thank Mr. Owen for that. And as always, staff does an excellent job. So. Mr. Packer?
Yes, I would say, you know, we've heard a lot about this before it came to us. You know, I visited out here just recently and had gained a better sense of topography, geography, et cetera. And, you know, unfortunately, our society, our government, we all rely on fossil fuel. And this seems to me a lot better way to gain fossil fuel than mountaintop removal and a host of other strategies with regard to carbons. And so I really see that our commission, Mr. Owen in particular, has done a great job of sorting out recommendations that would help the project be sustainable and environmentally friendly. And I will support the motion.
Is there any other discussion on the motion?
Yes.
Mr. Prince, you know, our jurisdiction on this thing is very small. You know, it's from when your foot hits the water of the marsh till it comes out. And because of that, I'll probably vote one way. But if our jurisdiction was of the whole project, I'd probably vote another way. So that's just what I want to say. FC Head's not here. See, that's part of the joy and the pain of the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. We are not all powerful. We have a limited jurisdiction, but we have a lot of authority within that jurisdiction. Mrs. Les.
I just want to sort of voice my agreement with what Mr. Frank said, which is that, and to say, acknowledge that this is sort of a painful painful situation in which, you know, it's difficult, but I think given the limits of our jurisdiction, I will support this motion.
Any other discussion?
And I think, Mr. Prince, you put it best. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to stay within our jurisdiction, so that is what it is.
We have a motion by Mr. Ballard and a second by Mr. Neal to approve the project as presented with the 12 permit conditions that were proposed by staff. Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Any abstentions or recusals?
Recusal.
A recusal by Mrs. Eppert. So the motion passes 7-0 with one recusal. I want to thank everybody who came out here today. Here, you took your time. You brought your passion. I want to thank you for that. The meeting is adjourned.
The constitutional issue with the eminent domain to take private land, that's, you know, that to me is...
That's a federal law.